Okay, apologize for that. Sorry for the delay in this evening's meeting, but I will at this time call the February 21st, 2012 Monroe City Council meeting to order and ask if Edie, you'd take roll call, please.
Councilperson Gary.
I am here.
Kennebec.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis.
Present.
Campbell.
Present.
Hanford.
Present.
Right. Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We won't be here, but next week, Tuesday? Are we here next week?
No.
Oh, we are here next week.
Mm-mm.
No, we're not. Today's the 21st. 27th is Tuesday, so we're not here next week. Next week is the National Engineers Week, so due to the fact that we won't be here next Tuesday, I wanted to read this evening a proclamation recognizing especially our engineers here at City Hall, but all engineers through the National Engineers Week. So with that said, a proclamation here of the City of Monroe, National Engineers Week. Whereas engineers have used their scientific and technical knowledge and skills in creative and innovative ways to fulfill society's needs, and whereas engineers face the major technological challenges of our time, from rebuilding towns devastated by natural disasters to designing an information superhighway that will take our country through the 21st century, and whereas engineers are encouraging our young math and science students to realize the practical power of their knowledge, and whereas we will look more than ever to engineers and their knowledge and skills to meet the challenges of the future, now, therefore, I do hereby proclaim February 27th through March 4th, 2012, as National Engineers Week in the City of Monroe. So since Brad's the only engineer here... Jeff Sachs does have a degree in engineering. So, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your work. And appreciate all you do. All right. No need for a public hearing this evening. We do have this time now set aside for comments from citizens. This is your opportunity to speak to City Council on any issue except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. We'd ask that you would please provide your name and address for the record, if you would, and please limit your time to 5 minutes. And I don't have anybody signed up at this moment, but if there's anybody in the audience, absolutely.
Vicki Mullen, 10312 210th Street Southeast, Snohomish, Washington, 98296. I'm going to be in charge this year. I think it's going to turn out to be the farmer's market manager. And it's a dream, has done it in the past, but someone else has been the manager. It's held on a Tuesday, and it's in the past has closed off Ann Street, and I'll be working with the Parks Department on that. But I wanted to add, this week I'm putting together the applications for the farmer's market. So if anyone here in the audience or any of the council members, if anyone knows of any farmers or food vendors or crafters that they think might want to receive an application, I really appreciate getting in touch with me because we have a good list from the past years, but we really want to expand it this year. We're going to be sending out also some information about other activities that happen in Monroe. The highway count on Highway 2, is very high, and I'm not so sure that other people in other communities might know, you know, other farmers and things might know how much actual exposure they get when they do attend the Monroe Farmers Market, because in the past we've struggled with getting enough people. The reason it's on a Tuesday is because other markets already are established and have been established for a number of years on the weekends, and so we find that it just, we aren't able to do a weekend market, although that is always the best time for one. And then the Snohomish is on Thursday, so that wasn't available. So this Tuesday market will now be, I believe, in its third or fourth year, and want to just make it bigger and better. And so anyone that has any ideas or suggestions for it or can spread the word, I'd sure appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to address council at this time? All right, seeing none, then we'll move along in our agenda this evening. Onto the consent agenda. Councilmember Gamble.
I'd like to pull the 6B1, the bills. Or on this version, 2A.
2A, the bills.
Yep.
Okay. We're going to need to. Yes, no?
I think we can leave it.
We can leave it? Okay. All right. All right. Okay. We will pull item 2A from the consent agenda. Do I hear a motion to approve the remainder of the consent agenda?
So move.
Second.
All right. Motion's been made by Councilmember Camp, seconded by Councilmember Gearing to approve the consent agenda minus item 2A. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Councilmember Gamble.
Yes. So I pulled the bills because in the course of this last week I'm performing my regular job, which most of you may or may not know. I'm the general manager for Frontier Communications. I deal with government agencies all across the state. A lot of them are our customers. And in this last week, I got a request to show up at the city of Monroe to do a traditional review of account. And I came. That's my job. I am a salaried employee. I'm non-compensated for sales or anything of that nature. But I was also reviewing this night's agenda, and I started to realize that even, when you look at our ethics code, it is very, very, very stringent, even the appearance of an ethics issue. So I did realize and went back and looked, and there are within the bills once in January, and I need to check in December, and I will check, afterwards, where Frontier is listed, in the consent agenda under the bills. And I voted on that, and that could definitely be construed as an ethics violation. I wanted to put that out as public record. It's something that I discovered, through the process of doing the review at the city. That process in itself as well can't happen, because that could also be construed as an ethics violation. So I met with Gene right after the meeting. Should have done it before, in hindsight and retrospect. But having done them a million times, didn't even think twice about it. I've assigned a new executive champion from the Frontier team in Dan Clark. That is how, from a Frontier perspective, we're going to interact with the city of Monroe. But again, I wanted to put this out there for folks to know. I'm not a commissioned person within the corporation. I'm a salaried person. I don't get any, benefit or gain, but it definitely could be the perceived that I do. So it's out there for the public consumption, and that's it. That's why I pulled, and I would like, and I will be checking every week now in the bills under F to see if we're there, and if at all possible, if we could pull that as a separate item so that I could vote on the consent agenda, that would be great, because I will be abstaining and removing myself from the chambers for any vote that is dealing with Frontier.
I appreciate Councilmember Gamble bringing that to our attention. I'd say not friendly, but serious reminder to the council and our boards and commissions that our ethics ordinance is much more restrictive than state law. Goes well beyond, in my opinion, what state law considers unethical behavior and so forth. And the Councilmember Gamble mentioned, the mere perception can often be difficult, I guess, to walk through as a reality based on how our ethics ordinance is created. And so just a serious reminder to all that any business that you might have, I would strongly encourage you to speak to staff, City Administrator Brazel, myself, prior to approaching, discussing, contacting anybody at City Hall. I think that my answer would always be take the most cautious way, that being don't do it. So I think that that's enough to be said, but that's we'll move on from there, I guess. Any other questions or comments or
begs other questions. I mean, is this? It feels like, are you looking for something else or not? Is this the end of it? Is there a remedy? I mean, Councilmember Gamble voted on two things. I mean, you can't undo that. So there's no action to take with regard to a previous. You couldn't. I guess, and I don't know if this is the right time to talk about it or not.
To be honest, I'm putting it out for the public.
I get it.
In case someone wants to file an ethics complaint against me, that would be the next step. If someone wants to file an ethics complaint against me,
That's not where I was asking about here, but and that very may well be the next step. Sure. Okay.
I guess City Attorney Diane.
Frontier is one of our ongoing contracts. There is a Frontier bill in every batch of payables that we do every month. There will be a Frontier bill. It's one of our routine bills. Are you wanting me to pull that out?
Well, I haven't seen it in every one of the packets, though. It's not in the PDF that's attached to to the agenda. The only one that I could find that was attached in the PDF was the January 3rd, I believe, 3rd or 6th. The day we were inaugurated. So.
Clarity or anything. We'll have that councilor account.
I'm just curious. So, in the future, where I give the bills a review, but the possibility of missing something is always tantamount. Do we need to provide a list of possible conflicts that we may have? And then have staff review it before it comes to council? I don't know what the procedure would be from here on.
Well, I think it's important to understand possibly what a conflict might be, and that we'll have the city attorney to clarify that a little bit. And maybe I'll have you do that now. I think you shared a little bit earlier what that definition is.
Sure. I'm sorry.
And then I was going to say from that, have council and the other boards and commissions determine whether or not, as a reminder, whether or not there may be in their mind. I would say that if you feel that there is, mm-hmm. then I would bring it to council or to myself or to City Administrator Brazel.
If I may, though,
yes.
The possibility of oversight with the number of bills we have is very high. So without some sort of second review by someone, I would feel that it is a possibility that anybody up here on this council and other staff could also make an inadvertent mistake, vote on a bill, and realize it later. So we probably need a review procedure to make sure that we're not left holding the bag, I guess.
Yeah, let me defer to the city attorney for the definition of conflict as it pertains to the conversation that we've had. That might answer your question, because you're right. Something might come through that happened.
In the code, council, at least in one place, does indicate that what is being specifically prohibited is a knowing violation. So there's an inadvertent...
I'm sorry, could you speak up a little
bit? I'm sorry. One of the references in the city's ethics code does pertain to a knowing violation, speaking in terms of the council members and other public officials mm-hmm. shall not knowingly engage in activities that create a conflict of interest. So there is human nature. Mistakes do happen. But we're all governed by the same ethics code, and it's ultimately incumbent upon each individual employee and public official mm-hmm. to ensure that there is not a conflict being created by our activities or your activities. And that's why I think it is important to review the claims checks and any other matter that might be coming before council, and just on a commonsensical basis determine whether or not there's some interest, financial or otherwise, that you or a family member may have in that matter. And if so, I would strongly recommend vetting that with staff before the meeting rather than during or afterward. It's always easier to avoid a potentially problematic issue by some proactive steps than it is to clean up an inadvertent mistake after the fact. With respect to the two specific potential ethical concerns that were raised by the previous discussion, the city's ethics code does prohibit council members and public officials generally from having a financial interest in any matter. And that's very broadly defined under the city's code, more broadly defined than the state law would define it. And it includes situations where the city employee or public official is a paid employee, agent, consultant, or officer of any corporation, partnership, joint venture, business, or other entity that is contracting with or attempting to contract with the city. So that's a very broad net that the code casts, for better or for worse. And that's the policy that has been enacted in the city's ethics code, and I think it's important for council to keep that in mind. The second ethical concern that's potentially implicated is the code's prohibition against a public official or employee using his or her official position for the purpose of influencing the selection or non-selection of the conduct of business between the city and the entity in which the city has a contractual relationship with. So that's hopefully commonsensical. None of you should be using your official position to influence the city's actions in a way that's going to self-enrich, for lack of a better term. So again, going back to my core advice, please let the staff know earlier rather than later if there's any potential for a conflict, and staff will get you a response as to what the appropriate answer is, and if there are any recommended steps to avoid the issue, be happy to opine.
Okay. I think with regards to your question, if I understood right, is that there may be a bill that is in the agenda, mm-hmm. and I don't go line item by line item every time to see every bill. And so knowingly or unknowingly, you may approve a bill that is in there. The other comments are directed towards actions or interactions with staff related to any type of contractual or business agreement. Councilmember Gearing?
Thanks. It begs a number of more questions regarding what happened. I don't know if that's appropriate at this time. It's incumbent on each one of us to read through everything in the packet each week, and it, I could certainly think it could be easy to miss, but I think we've worked pretty hard over the last few years to try and, in the past there's been, maybe not the greatest light cast, on the people sitting up here because of ethical or at least, remembered ethical things. And so we've come a long way. I want to make sure that, something like this doesn't put us back where we were. So, or at least the perception of what was the issue in the past. So, is it? I don't think we have anything with AT&T. So I always look for stuff like that. And Councilmember Cudbeck's always stepped out of the room whenever there was even a hint of the mention of the Y. So maybe I don't know if there's a way just to improve. And we have kind of the council rules document, or perhaps there's even a way to just make it more clear within, here are just common sense things that should be done, and perhaps including that in the council rules of procedure, think through, everything you do on the daily, just that kind of stuff. I think while that may be a bit more of a hoop to jump through, I think it breeds more confidence in that we're taking every step necessary to let the public be confident that we're up here doing the right thing. So and that's ultimately where we want to be. I don't know if if he was trying to sell something or what. I mean, that's not really, I don't know what happened. And so, we don't want to,
Fair. I mean, I can tell you. I'm sorry. So,
I'm done. Thanks.
Councilor McGann.
Well, I can tell you exactly of the meeting. I am the general manager for the area. There's when we go on go out to meet with a customer, we go on, on a regular basis. Any government, agency or larger customer, we try to go out on a regular basis. I probably do a couple a week at a minimum. And I go out as the executive champion to talk about the business operating model of the corporation. Where do you go if you have, issues, escalations, that sort of stuff, to talk about, the products that we do have. Absolutely. I'm not, I am there as the operations leader, not as the salesperson. There's a salesperson that is present, that does that piece, sales commissioned and that sort of thing. Hindsight looking at it, I absolutely can see how that could put a member of the staff in a bad position. I even said it to city manager, Brazel, when that before it happened. This feels weird, and I should have stopped there. And that's the piece that I'm also, putting out there. I've got a degree in ethics too. That's the thing. And I look back, and I should have saw all of those, the warning signs. But again, I was just looking at, I don't have any financial gain. It's a customer that's already mine, and it's a routine review of an account. And we were also going through a billing systems conversion, and we wanted to make the city aware of that. So, from that perspective. But there is one thing that I did want to, because I did pull this from the record. What Diane said was that it may not show in the PDF, because is it in what we would be voting on here? Because I don't see it.
I'm not sure if the manual checks show up on that PDF.
Because there's a piece of me that would, until we get that straightened out, I'd like to recuse myself from voting on anything related to the bills until we determine, because I can't see it in the packet. It's not there. I don't see Frontier. But what I'm hearing is that there's stuff that we're approving that's not showing up there.
And that's what I'm talking about. Abundance of caution. I think that's what I was trying to say earlier. It's incumbent on each of us to be doing it and, making a sales call in City Hall, bad idea, right? And so,
well, see, that's so, the difference. It's not a sales call. I can see how someone that's my mindset change, right? To me, it's not a sales call, but I can understand how it could be perceived that way.
Things have been filed for less, and that's
I totally get it.
Don't want to exactly.
Before we go there,
sure.
Unless a motion arises, Councilmember Cudbeck.
Thank you. I have to believe that everybody up here has good intentions. And speaking as a fairly new council member, there's a lot of pitfalls. I mean, you went to the AWC training, and there are so many pitfalls for new council members, returning council members. And I don't know if there's some kind of procedure that, or some policy or something that can help us, you know, navigate through those pitfalls. I don't know enough about each of you to know where each of you work. I don't know if it makes sense to have kind of a mini bio sheet or a fact sheet on each of the council members. I mean, is it appropriate to help us wade through this? Because, you know, it helps the city if we don't have an ethics violation on any of us.
Indeed.
And it would help me if I knew where everyone worked and maybe some of the pitfalls, so that if I see something coming up, I could say, hey, we're about to vote on this frontier. Couldn't I say, hey, you know, Council Member Gamble, this might be something you would look at. But just to, you know, make the process a little bit easier to avoid those pitfalls, because they're out there. So that would be, if there's any other cities that do anything like that, or if we could come up with something where we can kind of be looking out for that. I mean, we're supposed to look out for ourselves, definitely. I get that. We have a responsibility to do that. But in taking the training in the AWC, there are a lot of pitfalls. So if there's a way to make it easier for all of us, you know, I would be very open to that.
Councilmember Hampton.
I guess I'd love some clarification, because to me, separating the visit that you had here, so separating that away, but as far as voting for paying Frontier on a regular basis, I'm failing to see the ethics violation. We're not saying, okay, let's establish a contact with Frontier. We're not saying let's upgrade their contract. We're just paying our normal bill. So I'm new, so, you know, I'd love some clarification. To me, that's not an ethics violation. I mean, if we were going to build a new Y, okay, then we need to obviously do that. But if we have to just pay the Y on a regular basis for some, you know, contract that we have already established, I'm failing to see the need for concern for ethics violation. So I'd love some input there.
If before the city attorney gives some from the legal perspective, just from history perspective, and I think some members of the audience will also remember, as well as possibly some of you from the position of a resident and voter, the ethics issue in Monroe has been at the very forefront of the of many discussions for going on probably close to 10 years, maybe 8 years. There was, I as a sitting council member, I had my own perspective with regards to the ethics ordinance. We are where we're at, not by just a simple means. I mean, well, it took a great deal, or there was a great deal of input and participation both on public and council with regards to the ethics ordinance. The particular passage that you read, I do believe that was the language. Won't have city attorney reread it, but the one that he read was an addendum or an initiative, was added to the ethics ordinance as an initiative. So that particular piece is, I would say, that holds a great deal of importance to the community. With that said, I think that's why we had a, you know, discussion, or there was a discussion with regards to a comment that another prior council member had made. So with that said, I think that just understanding that the ethics issue or ordinance here in Monroe is extremely important, extremely sensitive to the community. And so, as I stated, you know, my serious recommendation is that if in doubt, come talk to us, so that there's at least no opportunity for even an appearance of a violation, because our code is written such that an appearance of a violation is a violation. We can have the attorney really define that, but that's the intent. The intent was to get rid of even the appearance of a non-ethical behavior or actions on behalf of any board members or council. So maybe that. So with that said, yes, I would say that it would be extremely important that if we are voting to approve a payment of any kind to any organization that an individual may work for, then it's probably most appropriate that the individual recuse themselves and leave the room. So whether that's for profit, non-profit, I think it's important. So that help with your question there in terms of?
Yeah, I fail to see the ethics violation because it's already a contract established, but.
Yeah, I think it's just, and we can read it if you like, that where it's because an individual happens to work for an organization that we are contracting with. And that's where the potential lies. Councilmember Williams?
Thank you. I would ask that maybe we table this and have a study session to talk about that particular aspect. We already have a question on the ethics ordinance as to how it deals with executive session materials where there seems to be a gap. This might be another gap. I don't believe the intention of that ordinance was to prevent somebody that works for PUD from being on council. And yet, I look in this packet, there's bills from Lowe's, PUD, Office Depot, Staples. So if somebody's a cashier at Lowe's, does that mean that they're in violation because the city ran and bought a pack of screws? I just don't think that was the intent of the ordinance and how it was passed. So I would ask that we just table this until we can actually talk about it and that we don't continue to take up time tonight for it.
I agree. I just have to tell you, though, I believe absolutely that was the intent. We had three members of three boards leave because they were doing business with the city. It might have been two, but my opinion is, and the initiative maker was very purposeful in stating the initiative the way that they did for that very purpose. But we can continue to talk about this another time. So with that said, Councilmember Gamble is recusing himself from the portion of the consent agenda, the item 2A. He has left the council chambers, and so I'd entertain a motion to approve consent agenda item 2A.
So moved.
Second.
Right. Motion's been made by Councilmember Gary, seconded by Councilmember Ketterbeck. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. Okay. We may ask Councilmember Gamble to return at this point. Councilmember. Thanks.
Thank you.
Oh, it's not.
Yeah, please.
All right. Thank you. Moving along here then to the new business item number one. This is selecting options for the 2012 spring cleanup event. And Diane Nelson. Councilmember Gearing, we're going to turn on the light show here.
All righty. They pulled it down for you. They don't trust you.
I just wanted to say that tonight I will be asking the council to make a decision on this. And
sure. Go ahead, Tim.
And I'll do the presentation, and then we can talk about the different options. You can tell me which option you want to select. Jeremiah Jones is the field manager for our area of Allied Waste is here tonight in case there's any questions that I can't answer. We can wait on that.
Oh, are you calling you?
Oh, no, you can say that.
No,
but
that's good. Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the spring cleanup event, and then I'll talk about the options, and you just tell me which you would like to do. For 2011's curbside, we had the curbside cleanup pickup is what we did for 2011. Allied's invoice to the city was for $46,000. City put in also labor, fuel, and equipment because it takes all week and our crews pick up what Allied cannot pick up, and that cost us $15,000. So the total cost for the event was $61,000 for 2011. Of that, 167 tons of material was picked up. 35 tons of that was yard waste. And an estimated 25 to 30% of the residents participated in the event. Now, that does not count those that put stuff on and had it gone in the morning, because I know there's a lot of backlog.
Sure, you're on sale.
That's just a snapshot of last year's event. For 2012, our cleanup will be, if we do curbside, then it'll be the week of May 1st through 4th. If we do the single day event, it'll be Saturday, May 5th. Just so you know what's going on in the community, Snohomish is doing theirs on Saturday, April 14th. Sultan's doing theirs on April 28th, Saturday. And Lake Stevens is doing theirs on Saturday, May 12th. And Easter is Sunday, is April 8th, so that's a bad weekend to do anything for cleanup. The options for the cleanup event are, one is the Clean City, which is the curbside cleanup, which we've been doing. Two is a Clean Garage, which is centralized. Three is a community building event. Yeah, and I'll talk about each one of these events in particular, in specifics. The Clean City Curbside Cleanup, this is what we've offered in the past. This is what we have been doing. It's the greatest opportunity for residents to get rid of unwanted items and reduce, the whole idea is to reduce opportunities for illegal dumping. We don't want people dumping their trash and want them again. It's easy for residents. They can just put it out there and it gets picked up. They don't have to make any special arrangements of transferring and porting it to a specific location. It's also the most expensive option. It's most labor intensive and it reduces the most material for disposal. So, like I said in the other slide, Allied Invoice Monroe is $46,000 for this event. So, I'm just using that 46 as a comparison to the others of what Allied charges. The second option is the Clean Garage option. And this is a typical one-day event where residents haul items to one location. We would probably ask the high school if we could use their parking lot. City staff would do the traffic control and the residency check, and then Allied unloads the stuff out of people's vehicles. Lake Stevens and Snohomish both use this model, and they have much success with it. Allied's cost to each of these cities is approximately $20,000, so as you can see, it's a lot cheaper than the curbside one. The community building event is a third option, and it uses the Clean Garage model, but it encourages community participation from other groups. For instance, we would get like Boy Scouts or Sportsman Club or Rotary or someone to help with hauling stuff to the location for seniors and disabled and, you know, people who can't get their stuff to a location. We would have some kind of a sign-up coordination where we would get groups that would help in getting this stuff to the location. Other clubs, like the high school parents of high school seniors, they could have a baked goods and sell coffee and stuff as a fundraiser. You could also add like battery recycling, go to the county and do like battery recycling. You can pass out conservation kits. You can have all sorts of different groups doing stuff as they snake their way through the event. And City of Sultan does this model, and they have a lot of success with it. They have a sportsman club, I think, haul the stuff through the site for people that can't. And again, the bill from Allied to Sultan is approximately $20,000. So the single day event is a lot cheaper, but it's not as easy for residents. I know the residents like just being able to throw it out at the end of their driveway. They still have to come in, you know, for the big stuff and get tickets. You know, if you're putting on a refrigerator or, you know, big stuff like that, they still have to get tickets. But the idea is, with a community event, we would get someone to help them get it there if they can't get it themselves. You know, it's all up to you guys, whatever option you like. And let me know. That's basically it. Do you have any questions or preferences?
We do. We have a question. Councilmember Cutterback?
Thank you. Diane, in the report, it would have been helpful for me if we had Clean City, Clean Garbage, Community Building, and then almost like a grid, Allied's cost, staff cost, and then participation rate, or, you know.
Okay.
That would have just helped in a clean kind of graph. So some of my questions are, for the curbside pickup, this was the cost for 2011. What is estimated the cost for 2012?
I have no idea. I would imagine the same.
Okay, so you think it's somewhat the same.
It depends. The cost always depends on how much material
the tonnage.
Is collected.
Okay.
So we don't know until after the event.
Okay.
And so some years they put out a lot, some years they put out a little. We usually budget about $65,000 just to cover everything. So yeah, we have no idea until the event's over.
So that's what's budgeted this year is about $65,000. Okay. For the clean garbage, the centralized cleanup, do we know how many participated?
We've done it a couple years ago.
But that information would have been from Waste Management that they never provided.
So we don't know what the participant. Do we know what the staff cost was for that centralized?
I would think it would be minimal because all staff does is traffic.
So they do traffic control and proof of residency for...
Yeah, just standard
of
the gate.
Okay, so you think that's minimal. And then my last question, just about the community building event, if we were to have that, because it doesn't sound like we've done that yet, does staff organize the whole event and try to get the service clubs involved, and is that...
There is an employee of the City of Selton that is the coordinator for their event, and I would meet with her and pick her brain.
How they did it.
See how they would copy that.
Okay. Those are my questions right now. Thanks.
Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. In the past we had two. We had a fall and a spring curbside pickup, but those were pretty expensive. And then we went to the option number two. Up at the high school, the mm-hmm. feedback that we received at the time was that a lot of people couldn't get there, particularly elderly folks. They didn't. It's much easier for them just to get it off the curb rather to find somebody to get it to get it out there. So we did receive a lot of feedback. Definitely a cheaper option, absolutely a cheaper option, but less people did participate. There were numbers at that time, mm-hmm. although we'd have to probably go back and look at those. Mm-hmm. But the participation numbers were significantly lower when people can just put it out on their curb. And again, if you would you mind going back to the slide where you described the right there. That's the most expensive option. It produces the most material for disposal. I think that's actually a good thing, right? We're trying mm-hmm. to get rid of all that stuff, right? So when I read it in there, it was almost kind of like it was a bad thing, but I think that's a great thing.
I wasn't trying to say good or bad. I was just throwing it out there.
We chose a more expensive option in the past because of feedback from, you know, this is what was actually preferred, and more people can do it. It was a more expensive option. I can certainly see the argument for going back to a cheaper one location place, but there will be that feedback with folks who can no longer then feel like they can't participate. I've already tried myself because I didn't have time to get stuff up there, so they really have to weigh community involvement heavily between choosing those folks.
Well, and I think that, you know, Diane, commend you for understanding what some of those challenges are and seeking out some other additional opportunities to provide that through the community. That's been one of our key tasks here, you know, in many of the departments, is trying to improve the relationships between organizations that exist in the city, in the community, and City Hall. And so when Diane had shared that third one, I thought that was an awesome way to help overcome those needs that exist and also improve some connectivity in the city, as well as provide, you know, the most affordable way to do it. So the drop-off place, I know myself and my neighbors, we took 4 or 5 trips up there, so, but we had a truck, and that's, you know, we spent the day doing it, but you're right, there are some folks that can't, thereby the third option. Councilmember Camp, turn your light on.
I turned it off after hearing your discussion, but if I could just have the floor for a minute. So the third option just to me is more appealing because it does offer the community involvement, and I think it would also reduce the scavenging issue, especially on our street, where materials are tracked up and down as people go through the piles that are left out, and it becomes unsightly and an eyesore for upwards of a week.
Yeah, it's a whole week. So
yeah, so it's while I can understand the concern of having more people participate or more people able to put more things out there, like you, I was the neighborhood guy with the truck who was hauling stuff up for all the neighbors. But a community organization, I think, would be a much better idea. The other point is, with like traffic control, does it have to be city staff, or could one of the high school groups get involved in something like that where they would handle something? Because you mentioned that they're selling cookies and candies, but if they can put on a red vest and or an orange vest and tell them where to drive a car, that would be something to, as well.
Traffic control, I would think, you know, we'd only need like two people. You know, you just set up signs and cones. Mm-hmm.
My experience, it worked well that one day. Did we only do it for 1 year?
Yeah, a couple years, I think.
Was it a couple years? I just remember 1 year that we did it, and I thought it was very successful and helpful. That's it.
I love the part that I just sat in the car and they unloaded it.
Yeah, that's the other. Thank you.
Councilmember Gamble.
Is there any reason why we couldn't do, to address Councilmember Gearing's thing, especially for those that are physically unable? It's one thing if you can't get a truck or that sort of, but people that are physically unable, community building event piece, for whether it's Boy Scouts or whatever, where, you know, part of their service thing, where we have a process for people to say, look, I'm physically, unable or whatever, where the part of that community building event could be people going out and actually picking up for certain circumstances.
That's the idea.
Okay, so I missed that in those bullets there.
Service clubs. And we would have like someone who's a coordinator here at the city. People would call, and so we'd get a list of the addresses and an idea of how much stuff they have, and then send out service clubs to haul it.
Okay, I missed that. I didn't see that they were actually going out and getting it. And I really like that one.
But the key would be we'd have to get service clubs.
Correct. Yeah. Right. We can get Kurt.
We'll just volunteer. Councilmember Camp.
Just another question. So would the city be coordinating the people or the organizations that are going out and collecting from the people who don't have the trucks or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay, so it would be centrally organized. Okay, that was it. Thank you.
So tonight, Council, there is a request for a motion to approve one of the options. Diane would be grateful to have that. I believe Jeremiah Jones would also be grateful to have that so that we could begin preparing. May's going to be here much quicker than what? Very quickly. So, but before that, again, any other questions or thoughts with regards to the different options? No. Okay, well then, anybody want to entertain a motion to approve option number 3?
I'll make a motion to approve option 3.
About a second?
Second.
All right. Okay. All right. The motion has been made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Gamble. Any other questions, comments? Councilmember Gearing.
Maybe hadn't given this one as much credence as the previous two, so I'm glad to hear other council members thinking that this one's a better idea, because I don't think that I would have voted for it without that discussion. The real difference between that and someone else is really, and number two is really just, is more community involvement. That's the real difference between 2 and 3.
Yes.
It's kind of the way it's marketed, really. But it's still going to be at one spot. High school or whoever.
Correct.
Okay. And how physically unable or physically limited? How do we? Is that a Boy Scouts thing? Is that kind of?
Well, that's.
Does that need to be officially part of this, or are we just saying this is kind of what we want in it? I want to make sure by voting for the third option. Are we just going to talk more about this helps you plan?
No, if you item number 3, we'll just go forward with it, and we'll immediately meet with consultant, find out what they would do, and I would be actively contacting service club. Well, I would love, I guess, and I would contact service clubs, get them lined up or get on board, so that when we do send out the flyer and everything, everyone will say we'll already have service clubs on hand to help with calling.
Good Boy Scouts can't drive trucks.
No, the parents can.
All that. I mean, there are other groups that can do that. I just.
Thank you. I'm in favor of option number two. I think that, you know, at the end of the day, we're still talking about hauling garbage, and I'm not sure how much staff time is going to be tied up in this. And, you know, so it just seems like it's not something that I think is wise for us to spend our resources on. So that I think option number two is great. Option number one is three times the cost, and we get 25% participation to 30%. So you could even do option two twice a year and still be cost effective. So I just don't want to be utilizing staff time to produce a community event around garbage collecting. So,
Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, I guess what I was, your questions you were asking is that item number three includes a process for people to reach out if they can't do it. That's really what we're saying. Whether it's service clubs or whoever's identified, there's a process that allows them to say, I can't physically do it myself. Can you have someone come get it?
Okay. They would contact City Hall, and we'd get to them the information so that we could ferret it out to the service organizations.
Yeah, I don't think in our discussion that, to Councilmember Williams' concern with regards to staff time, I don't think that this is going to be taking hundreds of hours of staff time. There's going to be some staff time committed to the to communicating to the groups what the intent is, and then there's going to be staff time committed to communicating the individuals who have a need to those same groups. But really, it's a matter of communication, not so much. I guess coordination is part of that, but I was not fearful that we were going to be spending, you know, gads and gads of time, you know, on this project. On the, you know, the intangible benefit side is that it is a community building event, and so who can put a price on community building? Councilmember Williams again. All right. Okay, any other questions, any other comments? All right, then we'll go ahead and take a vote on that motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
All right, motion does pass 5-2 with Council Members William and Hanford in opposition. All right. Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
Do we? Oh, you need
it. I don't think that's
okay. Paul?
About 183 acres, about 100 existing houses, the rest of it's undeveloped. That'll give you a pretty good picture of the property. A little bit of history, it's in our comp plan in two different land uses of residential, which I'll show you in just a second. And this grows out of the 2009 annexation plan that the council had done together, which carries us to 2015. There's several properties to be annexed over that time. I think this one is actually a little ahead of schedule from that strategy plan. But this was initiated by one or more of the property owners within this Roosevelt Ridge area. So last year the council said, go ahead, let's move ahead with this annexation. And at the point we're at now, the city does have the authority or does have the ability to, I'll say, pre-zone this land. It's within our growth area, so we can assign a zoning classification to this so that if and when it is annexed, the zoning is in place right at that same point. So there would be two different zones that come with that. Now, this is the first, I think, the first annexation that is subject to election. And there's a part of your handout had a series of steps in this and a schedule that we really have to meet in order to make that November election. So it's fairly critical that we work through this process. But we're bringing it here tonight for some introductory discussion. It goes back to the Planning Commission next week, 27th, February. They'll be sending back a recommendation to council following that meeting, so we'll be able to take some steps immediately after that. This is the designation we have in our comp plan. Basically, the vacant lands are in that residential 5-7, which translates to a 6,000 square foot zoning district. You are 6,000, about 6 lots per acre. The part that's developed is at a lower density to reflect basically what's there, but in that 2-5 range, which translates to our urban residential 9,600, which is about 4 lots per acre, roughly. But those will determine those two zoning classifications that would come into play with this. So that's really where we're at with this one. It's fairly straightforward. Let's say it's citizen initiated and it's subject to election. I'd be happy to take some questions and see where we go.
Councilmember Gary.
Thank you, and thanks, Paul, for bringing this tonight. One of the reasons last year, Councilmember Walk and I were in agreement with kind of moving this to the forefront, one of the reasons we wanted to talk about annexing it and putting it on the list was to make sure that we got it into the city so that it had to meet our city guidelines and that we have a little bit more control over what development might be going on in these areas in the future, kind of the long-term thing. It was the same for the Roosevelt Road, which we have an agenda item on that in a little bit, but my point, I think, on that item will be the same on this one as well. The R5-7 is pretty standard. A number of areas in the islands are R5-7, and the foothills is also the UR6000 zoning. And one of the reasons why that was palatable in the past was because of the Snohomish County Buildable Lands Report and the lack of density that we had in town, correct? And so we wanted, the intent was bring this in so we could at least show good faith effort in doling it out, right? Well, whether that actually happened or not, you know, giving it the zoning so that could happen, being that long-term type of thing. So if you're looking for feedback with regard to the R5-7, I think that's important to be able to continue to show that we are still moving towards those density targets that we've been given. The 2-5, those are just existing. You'd be recommending, are you recommending 2-5 for the areas where it's already, the white areas where there's already existing housing?
That's what's designated in the comp plan.
In the comp plan, okay.
From 2005, the lower and the higher densities, basically with developed versus undeveloped property, much easier to ratchet up that density where it is undeveloped.
Where it's undeveloped, I agree, absolutely. Okay, all right. I want to make sure that the distinction, so that the R5-7 does make sense. It also makes
it
sense on the Roosevelt Road. It shows that good faith effort, and it doesn't mean they're going to build, you know, when I think about it as well. So those are some of the things that we talked about last time. I'd certainly like to make sure that we are putting forth that good faith effort too. I think there were some penalties associated with, if I'm not mistaken, not pursuing those density targets that were given to us from that report. There's a lack of funding that we could, there's funding that could be pulled, things like that.
If we don't continue to make effort toward those targets, and actually it also penalizes us in being able to consider expanding our urban growth area for future growth.
From a long-term standpoint, I think this makes sense. And again, as we had discussed in last year and before, getting that into city control so that when a developer does come, the economy turns around, they want to put their houses in, we have more control over those supply residential developments to the standards that we'd like to see. So I'm still in favor of moving of getting this done.
Let me just talk to you about the yield of this. This is a good choice, a good area to try and meet some of that target we have for 1,000 units in our buildable lands report, which will be a new report coming out later this year. But I haven't done any sort of detailed analysis, but I'm thinking that this would yield somewhere could be 500, maybe 600, maybe more units, which would be a long way toward the 1,000 units that we're short right now, about 2,500 people. So this would be an excellent step toward reaching that target. And it shows some pretty good faith on our part. Roosevelt Road, which is literally just across the bypass, is not as good a candidate for reaching that target because of the limited land area that's available. We'll talk more about that later in the meeting. But this is a good move in our part.
The recommended or the request then this evening is for a motion to direct staff to move forward with establishing pre-annexation zoning regulations for the Roosevelt Ridge annexation area for the election November 6, 2012. In addition to that, are you asking for specific recommendation as to the zoning so continue with R57?
Well, it actually takes to change those designations, we take a comprehensive plan amendment since they are part of the comp plan.
Okay. So we're just looking to go forward with the November election.
Right. And then to bring in simultaneously or previously the appropriate zoning for those land uses.
Which would
so we don't have to take any separate action after annexation. Gotcha. It would be a clean annexation.
So if we move forward now, we can simultaneously move forward with comprehensive plan amendment to change the zoning to higher density.
We'll move ahead with the zoning change, assign a zoning, actually change the color on the map.
Yeah.
And when it's annexed, then we can actually enforce and apply that zone. But if it's not annexed, then it remains on the map until it comes around again.
Okay. Councilmember here.
If I could just follow up, is there some way to tie in the school districts? Probably not, but I'm going to throw it anyways. The school district boundaries and the post office issues are already with Roosevelt Road. That city's been in, that area's been in the city for 4 years and still has a Snohomish address. It's in the Snohomish school district. Served by Monroe, water, sewer, stormwater, all those things 4 years later. And so, that begs the question, why is it in the city at all? But for this particular area, since we don't, like you said, clean annexation, making this clean, is there subsequent processes that we can be following to, it goes to the bigger vision of Monroe. When you're in Monroe, you want to understand that you're in Monroe. So now you're legally in the city of Monroe, but your address is still Snohomish, you're in the Snohomish School District. That will be a rub for me until we get these. Is there a subsequent process that can be followed as well to say, tell the post office, hey, by the way, you need this zip code, needs to be 98272 now. Is there a school district swap? I'm curious as to how that works and if that can be. Can we tie these things together somehow? So, hey, welcome to Monroe. Your address is Monroe now. There's something to that. For me, there is. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, there are a couple of processes. And actually, I live in Snohomish. My landlord, the first check I sent my landlord, he never got it because he lives just on the west side of Roosevelt Road. And I sent it to Monroe. He didn't get his check.
Sounds like an excuse.
But there, regarding the post office, there is a process to basically change zip code, which would change the address from Snohomish to Monroe. I have been through it in more of a supporting role, and it's not an easy process. It takes quite a bit of time. It's doable, but it's very involved and it becomes somewhat political, and just trying to work through the post office bureaucracy is a bit of a nightmare. But the same is true for school districts. I think this came up at our joint meeting last week. There's certainly the potential for a trade. I've also been involved in some school district trades. Typically, it's a in-kind trade. You give me this, and I'll give you an equivalent land area or current or future population. And we understand that there actually is a square mile of Monroe School District that's on the west side of Highway 9, which might be a good candidate for some sort of trade with Snohomish. Not clear where the Snohomish, or the north boundary of the Monroe School District is. It would help to have district boundaries on our company maps. But it's certainly a possibility. It's something that we probably need to follow this process, or perhaps it could be initiated during this process just to test the water and see if there's any possibility of moving forward with that. But it can be done. Not easy, but it can be done.
But I appreciate that. It goes to the bigger issue of city vision. And when you live in the state of Monroe, you live in the state of Monroe, right?
I live in Monroe, but my address is Snohomish.
Exactly, yeah. Anyway, so if there's a way to streamline those things, I guess I'd be asking for that one. If the voters should choose to say yes to wanting to come to the center. Thank you.
Awesome.
Sounds very good, man.
Thank you. Brad, the paragraph on the cover sheet of this, the last paragraph on the first page of the cover sheet, talks about the water agreement. Do you remember we had that discussion and we were trying to figure out which was best? And I thought we were going to look into whether that was even possible with the city and the Roosevelt Water Association, whether they would even do that. Is there any feedback on whether they would be open to that?
They said they'd be open to it.
Okay, so they did say they'd be open to that. Okay. And I just want to be clear, this is, and I asked you this earlier, but, it'll only get annexed in if the election, so we're going through these hoops, hoping that the election goes through. It was citizen initiated. There is a developer up there that initiated this process.
Right.
Would changing the zoning or getting the zoning set now, would that help, in your opinion, would it help influence maybe the residents to agree to the annexation or not?
If it were me, and based on past experience, I think it would help immensely to know what the zoning will be.
Right.
So that people understand, should they choose to find out, just what exactly does that mean, rather than saying we're going to annex you in the city. Period, to have some idea of how it's going to affect their property, and that can be explained through the process for anyone who would like to, who can listen, who can hear the message. But annexation is always about improved services for, as you know, for utilities, for police and medical services. Well, I think we have interagency agreements for things like medical service. But there are people who think independently and would rather not be in the city. They like being in the county. I don't know what the taxes are like. But I think that if we take some proactive action to zone the property now, it will help clear up some questions that people might have and maybe lead to a successful annexation. And I should mention that every registered voter who lives in this area votes. You don't have to be a property owner. You can be a tenant. But it's not property owners, per se. Owner, occupants, and tenants all vote. So the tenants, what few there may be, they have a voice in this.
Councilmember Kim?
Thank you. Has this pre-zoning option been done before with other annexations in the city? Do you know?
I don't believe it's been done here in Monroe.
Okay.
I can't speak to the places.
In the past, things have come to the city as 9600.
Mm-hmm.
We've never done an election method before. In the past, it always came in as 9600. More recently, we picked it. The council said, you can fill out this petition to come in and it says you want to annex the city, this zoning. But since we're doing the election method, it's slightly different. Mm-hmm. In order to have it on the ballot that says I want to come in at this zoning, we have to have it pre-done. And that's what the council directed staff to do last year when we brought this to the council. They said, bring it back, but we want to have make sure that the zoning is on the ballot so people know who they're voting for.
Just so I have some perspective, so how was Roosevelt Road handled when it was in? That's the section there, right? The peninsula?
Okay.
That one.
That was done by a petition method.
Okay.
Yeah. And then after they were annexed, we changed the comp plan to make it more dense, and now we're going through the process of rezoning that to match the comp plan.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't have the word of the motion in front of me, but I'll make the motion to direct staff to do what they need to do to move this forward.
Here it is. Direct staff to move forward with establishing pre-annexation zoning regulations for the Roosevelt Ridge annexation area for election on November 6, 2012.
Second.
All right. Motion has been made by Councilmember Gehring, seconded by Councilmember Hanford. Any other questions for Paul this evening? Okay. With that said, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Paul. But you're not done yet.
You're ready.
Lunch tonight.
Keep it all night. All right.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Councilmember Williams?
Yeah, I live in the overlay, so I'm going to recuse myself for this discussion.
Thank you. Let the record show that Councilmember Williams is refusing himself from the airport compatibility zone discussion. He's living nearby and he has exited the council chambers.
I live there too.
Where do you live? Rainier.
Is that it? I think I'm just inside it.
Fairgrounds.
55?
Where's the fairgrounds?
Jason, you're right here.
Yeah.
Councilmember Gamble also lives within the airport compatibility zone and he's asked to recuse himself as well. City Attorney?
I think it'd be fairly characterized that both council members are recusing themselves out of an abundance of caution voluntarily.
Yeah. Thank you. Let the record show that Councilmember Gamble has exited the chambers. Councilmember Kedebeck?
The YMCA, which I work for, owns property in the overlay.
So out of an abundance of caution, would you be suggesting that you might, are you going to recuse yourself?
I think so. I mean, okay. It's just a notice requirement, but
all right.
I think just to be safe.
Okay. One more, yeah. Anybody else live? Councilmember Davis?
Well, I'm very close to the line there. I'm not really sure exactly, but
I'm a block away.
Well, if he does,
we're going to need somebody as we're going to have to. There's going to be a requirement to have four to move.
Well, if Councilmember Davis feels that he needs out of an abundance of caution to recuse himself, then all members can return.
And that principle applies to the doctrine of necessity under the appearance of fairness doctrine, which in turn really only applies to quasi-judicial proceedings. This is just a text change to the city's code. Doesn't even really affect the substantive regulations of the underlying district, if I understand the proposal correctly. So I don't know that anyone living outside the boundaries of this area, even under an extremely expansive view of the city's ethics ordinance, would be justified in recusing himself.
But he is saying that he lives within the zone. Councilmember Davis does.
Yes.
He does.
Well, so what I'm hearing is Councilman Davis is also suggesting out of caution that he would like to recuse himself. But with that said, we do find ourselves in the need for a quorum. And City Attorney?
Again, that doctrine of necessity really technically only applies to appearance of fairness matters, which in turn are only quasi-judicial. This is not a quasi-judicial matter. I don't believe that this proposed ordinance really affects the property in a way that a substantive regulation might.
So with that said, would Councilmember Davis has stated or has made this comment, can we call the council members back or can we move forward with three?
All the council is going to be doing tonight is reviewing on first reading, then three is fine. But in order to pass any ordinance, and actually for adoption, four is required. Again, I don't believe that this is the type of issue that should be covered by the ethics code. I mean, it's certainly not, recusal would not be required at all under the state law.
Okay. And yet we have three members who have left.
Let's just review and discussion. If that's not the only recommended action, then Councilmember Davis can step out. We shouldn't have an issue.
We'll do that. And
you're not asking for action, right?
Council, before this comes back for actual action, I'll be happy to provide some clarifying comments after review of the city's code. I cannot believe that the intent of the city's ethics code would be to prevent the council from voting on this. This is a very simple text change that doesn't do anything but change a rather obscure procedure and doesn't really go to the underlying substantive regulations in the zone. But I'll follow up with a message to a city administrator that can be distributed to council to clarify that.
Okay. Now, the only question that I have, City Attorney, is that we are in session without a quorum in a regular meeting.
Technically, you need a quorum to have any discussion. That's correct. So,
Councilmember Cuddleback's the only one that doesn't actually live in the area. Like, walked out, so she's probably all right. She's all right. They're all right.
When do you need this approved?
Next call.
I just can't believe that.
He's living on the other side of town, no?
Yeah. Where'd you live?
Not on that one.
Well, I know where you live now. Where you said you used to live?
Okay.
I just think it's absurd.
No, you live further south than that.
Yeah, I think it just doesn't go to the substance.
This was the zone, everything in the airplane?
Yeah, I guess that's the overlay.
Oh, yeah, I'm in there, too.
While we're waiting, does it matter which way the airplane's going? I'm just curious.
Pretty sure I'm in there, too.
So, all right. Well, we were left without a quorum, and as such, I've asked the members of council to recuse themselves to return to the chambers, and also at this time, we can get more detail on this for the next time when we're going to take action on the issue. But for now, if the city attorney would repeat the statement with regards to the council members' attendance specific to this action as it relates to the ethics ordinance.
Well, two issues, council. First, the mayor is absolutely correct that the council needs at least a quorum to take any action. And the doctrine that I was referring, or that was referred to earlier about bringing council members who had recused themselves back in the room really only applies where the council is dealing with the appearance of fairness doctrine in a quasi-judicial context. This is a legislative context, so that really doesn't apply here. The potential concern under the ethics code, as I understand the council members who voluntarily recuse themselves, is that it does provide, under the city's ethics code, that no council member should be voting or taking part in any council action concerning any contract, property, or other matter of any kind in which the public official has a financial interest or which otherwise creates a conflict of interest. I'll be happy to provide some comments that can be distributed to council prior to your next meeting. I understand there's a tight time frame for this proposed amendment that will clarify how I view that ethics code provision in this context and hopefully provide some definitive assurance one way or the other. From my 2 cents worth right now. I'd be extremely surprised if the intent of the ethics code was to prohibit council members from voting on this minor procedural text change that doesn't really address the substance of the regulations underneath it or affect the value of property or anything like that. But I will follow up with comments one way or the other.
Councilmember Hamburg.
Just for clarification, I believe I'm in there too.
Oh, okay.
Just realize that.
All right. Okay. Well, with that said, tonight is simply for review and discussion. There will be no action taken this evening on the item this evening. Thank you for returning, and we'll move forward with Paul.
Okay. Well, this is indeed a minor technicality, but what this is about is back in 2006, council established this airport overlay zone. And as part of that ordinance, the code requires us to every 5 years notify every single property owner in that area within the city, about 2,100 properties, to notify them, to give them notice that you are in an airport influence area, you may be subject to a navigation easement with the airport, you may be subject to potential noise or other impacts because of airport operations. Just a formal notice that reminds them that the property is within this zone. There may be some potential impacts. There are no restrictions other than the restrictions within the flight zones regarding building height and so forth and use. But for most all of these people, it's simply a reminder that you are in this district. So the intent of this change is to delete a few words in that ordinance or in the code that says we have to send everyone, I think, 9 or 10 pages from the zoning code book. It's about 10,000 or 12,000 pieces of paper plus postage. And what we'd like to do is use a postcard that still gives them all the information it talks about in the code. There's some specific wording that needs to be passed on, but rather than provide them with 9 or 10 pages that most people will throw away, I would, for me, give them the contact information, give them a number to call, website, a means to come and review this in City Hall, or just get more information. But I think we can do a good job of giving them the basics of this, what they really should know. And if anyone has some questions about it, they have an easy way to find out just what it means.
So if I understand, you're simply asking to remove a copy of this chapter and replace that with, for more information, check the city website at HTTP or contact City Hall at, or copies are available for review at City Hall Monday through Friday between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m.
That's right. So we expand on that deletion. As I said, we also include the basic instructions as put forth in that.
For makes sense. So,
all we're doing is saving paper and a whole lot of staff time.
Sounds great. Any questions for Paul? No? Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Be back.
All right. We'll see you in a bit. Like right now. Sign code amendments.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about sign code. Jeff is here. We formed a small advisory committee several weeks back, one business owner and sign vendor, myself and Mark from our planning department, and Jeff. Objective being to go through this sign code, find the problems, find the issues, find the pieces that are that people are concerned about or having trouble interpreting and following. And basically trying to solve some of the problems that we've encountered in the last several months. We've kept a long-running list. You might recall, as part of our work program, we have what's called the Economic Development Review of the Zoning Code, and that's really going through the entire book, trying to conflicts and clarify a lot of things and try and ease some potential restrictions that may be hindrance economic development without compromising the quality of what we're regulating. But what we've done so far, we've been talking about a lot of different issues. The general feeling seems to be that the cycle is not broken. It's not inherently bad. But there are lots of issue areas, some pretty minor, some a little more major. And I put together this basic list. And part of our thinking is there are really three kinds of sign, or three ways that you sign. You identify your business, whatever it might be. You know, Monroe Steaks and Spirits. And a lot of businesses advertise with that. What I would call that is, Monroe Steaks and Spirits serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or serving lunch and dinner. That's advertising. That's not identifying the business. Give me the name, and a lot of people like to add something more to that. And that generates a lot of different kinds of potential signage. Wayfinding is simply that. It's directional signage. It's monument signage. It's announcements of public places. It's things that help me find my way to the place. And I know, North Kelsey Place is seriously short of wayfinding. How do I know it's there? Downtown, how do I know downtown is here? I'm driving on Highway 2, I'll just blow right past both of those without some wayfinding, some identification of the districts, if you will. So we're trying to get a handle on that. Now, in terms of specifics, we talked about monument signage on Highway 2 for North Kelsey that would advertise some of those businesses that are further north, and I think that we should do the same for downtown businesses potentially that are off Highway 2. Off-premise means that I cannot, if I own a business on Kelsey Street, I cannot put a sign outside of my property. I can't put one down on Main Street or anywhere else unless it's on my property. That's to prevent this proliferation of signs. And there's going to have to be some thoughts to how we regulate this off-premise so that it doesn't become a vehicle for people to put signs every 10 feet down Highway 2. So we can limit it in some ways. And I'm also a very strong advocate of too much signage is self-defeating. Now, you look at those classic pictures of strip commercial, and there are literally dozens or hundreds of signs, and how do you pick out one within that? It's much easier to try and regulate the amount and the size and so forth so that when I do put up a sign, it's effective. It's not lost in this sea of conflicting signs and images and so forth. So that's one. Highway signs, this is a little bit different. We have, like Highway 2, we have 522. And I'll use Speedway Chevrolet as an example, or maybe one of the bigger businesses along Highway 2 that really aren't able necessarily to have signs to fit that situation. Along 522, you're going 50, 60 plus miles an hour, and it's a different perception of the signs that you're seeing. The businesses, I can't sign a business the same way on Main Street that I would on Highway 2 or 522. So I think we need to give some thought to maybe defining certain areas where we might allow some different type, this highway signage, or I call it highway commercial. It could even be potentially a new zoning district eventually, because the needs of those kinds of businesses are different from others that are, say, in a general commercial zone or a much slower speed of traffic on the streets. So that's something we're trying to deal with. And as a part of that is this dynamic sign. I'm talking about these, St. Vincent de Paul has their Tuesdays, senior day, and so forth, that changeable electronic display sign. And I know there's at least one, maybe more, other parties interested in doing that in Monroe. And I think it has some potential in the right place with the right kind of rules. I'll say that maybe part of the voter time is supposed to be devoted to public access or for public announcements. But there may be places where that might be deemed appropriate. I've seen good examples and not so good examples like anything else. And a little more specific, there are issues, fairly simple issues you would think, but things like building facades. Where does it say where I put a sign or how many signs I can put up? We've had done a lot of creative interpretation because every single building is unique. And every permit that comes in here is unique in some way. So you can't write code that's going to cover all of those things. But something as simple as saying I think now the code says that you have a sign above your primary entrance in so many words. But there are other cases, and I know there are a lot of existing cases where there's more than just signage on that facade. I think we need to find a way to allow some additional signage where it's appropriate on a facade and define that so that I don't come in and say, so what, you know, what is this? What can we do? Things like that. Internal tenants along Highway 2, I want to say east of Chain Lake. There's am I thinking where Woodfields is? Am I in the right place?
Yeah.
Okay. There are some tenants inside the building that may or may not be able to sign on that building facade so that people know that they're in there. And there's some limits on, maybe some limits on size or how that's handled, but they need some way to identify themselves because they can't. Until I get into the building and down the hall, I may not even realize that they're there. You talked about cabinet signs versus can signs, and it's more a matter of can signs can be, frankly, kind of tacky. But that doesn't mean that they can't be designed and built in such a way that they're not, that they don't detract from the building facade, or they don't send the wrong message by the fact that, well, I've got this cheap sign up here, and I think it's great. Thank you very much. But a little more work on trying to define these types of signs, and you know, the idea is not to regulate design. It's to establish some basic ground rules, and then let the business owners and the sign vendors get creative in how they actually put it together. The other landscaping and cladding. If I have a sign like this, and I've got two legs, that's considered a pole sign. And you have to somehow say this is the sign I've got maybe 2 or 3 feet to the ground with these two poles. Right now, the regulations say that you have to clad this bottom part. You have to cover it so that's a monument sign, so that it's a solid surface from ground all the way up. In fact, we had an issue with that with Bridgestone, who may or may not be coming to town yet, but they would have had this tremendous monolith sign. They were within the rules of the size and so forth, but it would have been 22 feet wide, 35 feet tall. It would have been something like this, and maybe the top inch would actually be the sign. It doesn't just simply be a blank space. So that was something we're going to have to address in terms of how we would work that out. But there's obviously an unintended consequence of some of these things. Now, flexibility, trying to write some code that gives us a little more flexibility in how we interpret so that we can have enough to be consistent to address things that are not clear in the code or in special situations, not to the point of having to pursue a variance. They cost, what, $1,600 and a lot of staff time. Variances are for something that's really in serious, for whatever reason, serious violation of the code. I just can't meet it. But allowing a little more flexibility to loosen the rules just a little bit and give us some wiggle room, if you will. Then there's another question about subarea codes, like North Kelsey has a sign code. And I'm not convinced that is really necessary. If we can modify the basic sign code that would address North Kelsey issues. Downtown, in my opinion, is a little bit different. I think it does probably deserve its own sign code since it really needs a different character, maybe a little more control over what the signs can be in that spirit of the downtown district. And I don't think there are other sub-areas. There are a number of master sign programs out there that may apply to this one building where I can come in and do a kind of a, it's almost like doing a special overlay of some sort. I can create my own rules within reason where I think the Lake Tide Building has a master sign program, for example, where they have a, they were able to do things a little bit differently because they have enough building mass or enough different things about their project that the code can't meet, so they can kind of write some of their own rules that way. I think they have a place, but it becomes problematic when you have the Monroe sign code and 10 or 12 or 15 master sign plans. Yet it's almost like having 20 different zoning districts. So I think we can, we need to keep a control on how much of that happens. So that's where we're headed. We're meeting on this. We've had a couple of meetings. We had to delay the last one. We're trying to write suggested code as we go. And our plan is to move forth with to the Planning Commission. You know, some direction from you folks here and how we're proceeding with this. And eventually come back to council with a rewritten code. It's not a total rewrite, which I know was the intent. We're kind of like cherry-picking, trying to fix the things that are wrong and not fixing the things that are not broken. So, as I say, the basic code, I think, is it's not bad. It's actually pretty decent. So we're trying to fix the remaining problems. And then, you know, as we go through this economic development review, we may find other things that, that we'll adjust as we go. But this is a good cleanup done in an incredibly short time. I think the last sign code change took 3 years, 2 or 3 years. So.
Councilmember Gary?
Thank you. Again, Paul, thanks for bringing this forward. For me, flexibility is one of the keys here. I've heard for over the last 5 years a number of business owners in that area, places that I frequented, who really hated the sign code. And even if you're just driving 25 miles an hour on North Kelsey, the guidelines that were established by council at that time, it was very hard. The road's curving this way, and you're trying to look this way to see what the name of the business is. It's very difficult. And I don't know that quite frankly that was business friendly. And so specifically in the North Kelsey area, would look forward to changes that make overall making our sign code more business friendly. If it's the EPS store, it's the holiday season, and where they're located, they're trying to get people to their store and ship boxes, during the holidays. They want to put out an extra banner, something like that. That shouldn't be allowed. Those kinds of things. We want to be business friendly. So if that's what you're talking about with flexibility, you want to make sure that is something that is built in with any changes that we're making. I think with regard, there are some changes, I'll say, that probably need to be made in that. I agree that downtown is different. We want downtown to have a look and feel that is unique in accordance with the downtown plan. So separate, and as North Kelsey becomes more auto-centric, as we've been talking about, definitely some changes there, and business friendly, I think, would be the key. And so, when I agree, flexibility, I'm hoping that's what is included there as well. That makes people feel welcome and makes that they feel like they can conduct business well. That's important to me. Otherwise, I'd like the ideas that have been put forward, some of the screenshots from the last couple weeks. And I appreciate the fact that you guys are digging into this. I look forward to the future discussion on it, for sure. Thank you.
Frankly, we've had a lot of problems with the North Kelsey sign code. And in some cases we say, well, I'm sorry, Jim, but this is a code that you adopted, not as a councilman, but you adopted as a developer. And you created your own problem, and we're kind of stuck in this corner. But we've been pretty good about working with people to do some interpretation of things and allow some things to be done that they may not always meet the exact letter of the code, which you can rarely do, but they certainly meet the intent, and we've had some great results with that. I think this will help us keep that consistency and give us the ability to do that. The other thing was I didn't mention was about enforcement. We have lots of problems with enforcement or illegal signs, I should say, and we have gently now and then trying to do something about the most blatant violators. We had a couple instances of people who were hanging banners well off site of their property, some things like that. But there's a fine line between like temporary signs, A-frame and so forth, sandwich signs, I guess they call them, of allowing those to happen versus coming down too hard and saying we're going to basically remove all of these temporary signs because they're all illegal. There's a some creative enforcement and tolerance that needs to happen.
If I may, then there's the spirit of the law, and then there's the letter of the law. And I don't. Sometimes the letter of the law is not business friendly, and so that's specifically with regard to banners and stuff like that. I think
you can't.
We would only use the spirit. The spirit of it should be we are an open. We want your business here.
Mr. Sands.
Just a couple of things too on the enforcement side. That's really the primary goal of this sanctuary rewrite, to create a code that can be enforced. Because right now, I don't think we could enforce our sign code in this town. We all would need to hire two or three guys just to run around town constantly addressing sign code issues. So an enforceable code is the key, with the flexibility that I think Councilman Gehring just brought up. The other key, and some things, I think, to a certain degree, the business community needs to be brought into this discussion, not only to allow them to have better signs, but also to create peer pressure on those that maybe don't. And I've talked to the president of the chamber about making the chamber create some policy. As a chamber member, you agree to uphold the sign code, and you agree to certain standards, maybe slightly above what the city code says. And so the chamber then, who are typically the longer term business members, they've got staying power in the community, they start to create a better signage profile for the city. Eventually the rest of the businesses will start to feel the pressure to do the same thing. A couple other things that came up is like a banner sign, for instance. You can put it up for 30 days, take it down, put it up, take it down, back and forth. Who's to know whose banner's been permitted and whose hasn't? Maybe we just get a little tag that somebody has to hang on their banner when they come in for their banner permit. And, January's tag says January on it. So, if it's up in March, anybody could come along and say, hey, Bob, your banner's been up for 2 months, maybe you should take it down. That's the kind of code that I think if we get the community working together, we don't need sign police running all over town. We then have a code that the community can still want to enforce. So, again, addressing a lot of the issues I think that are missing from the code is what we're grabbing on, reinforcing the fact we have a structurally stable code and putting in to the code, as Paul said, some flexibility for the planning and permit manager to make decisions where, there's a building that really should have a sign on the front and on the side of the building to allow that to happen. So it's a good process, and the message that we want to convey is we're probably going to take the better parts of the North Kelsey plan and pull the rest of the town up to that standard rather than push the North Kelsey guidelines that I think were written slightly better than a lot of, from an aesthetic point of view, try to bring the rest of the town up to that level. So that's really the goal. And I did want to point out one more thing. Our North Kelsey sign code and our downtown sign code are embedded in our comprehensive plan. And that's part of the reason we asked you to take the action last week, so we can pull that out of the comprehensive plan and put it into the sign code to make it more functional.
Well, I appreciate that you've included the chamber in the discussions as well. Having their input and support is very well welcomed. I think it's important to have that collaborative relationship between the city and the chamber. who represents a good portion of the businesses in town. So I agree with Councilmember Gearing. I think the flexibility, now mind you, the flexibility is on behalf of staff to be able to interpret the spirit of the law in order to fulfill not only guidelines, design guidelines, and so forth that are cohesive with throughout the city, but also for the purpose of helping the businesses best identify themselves or advertise or wayfind. So, but it's not flexibility on the it's not the business telling staff; it's staff being able to have a collaborative relationship or discussion with the businesses and to be able to make some interpretive decisions based on that on the specific needs. So, any other questions for Paul this evening? No, I think both Paul and Jeff, and the time that they've spent with the members from community and in looking into the sign code. So, appreciate your work, gentlemen. Okay, Diane, you're up again. A resolution authorizing the an inter-fund loan from the general fund to the North Kelsey Development Fund.
This is pretty straightforward. The North Kelsey Fund is just about out of money, still has to pay bills. The idea is that once we sell property, we'll have money to pay for the bills, but it's a timing issue. We haven't received the money from the property sales yet. And so in order to keep a positive cash flow in this fund, this inter-fund loan from the general fund's reserve, restricted reserve, would cover $100,000 cash until we sell it, realize the proceeds from the property sale.
So recommended action tonight is a motion to adopt a resolution number 2012-005 authorizing an inter-fund loan from the general fund to the North Kelsey Development Fund. Any questions for Diane? Councilmember Kedavec?
Thank you. So Diane, the expenditures that are budgeted for this year, can you kind of give me an overview of what those are?
Mainly professional services, legal fees, professional services, and admin fees to the general fund.
We're taking a loan from the general fund to pay admin fees to the general fund.
For the newer members of council, you might explain the North Kelsey Fund just a bit, because I'm not sure that everybody understands the intent behind the North Kelsey Fund.
Well, Brad might be better to do this because it's before my time. But I believe the North Kelsey Fund was set up with the proceeds from sales of other properties.
Way back when, the 319 fund, which is North Kelsey, was set up to put the money that was raised from selling the property that's North Kelsey Station, I think it is, where Blue Fire Mongolian Grill is, that piece of property, when we sold that property, so that we kept in North Kelsey to help sell the rest of North Kelsey. That's basically where that money came from, and the money that was sold, Lowe's went in there, separate part we paid off the loan. So just to keep that money separate so it would stay in North Kelsey as opposed to just having it absorbed into the general fund. And we were hoping that it would work out, that we would get the money from the sale before we ran out of money that was in there, but it didn't quite work out. It's been delayed a little bit, so that's why we need to take that loan. And then when the sale goes back, that money will be used to pay back the general fund, and then the rest of the money will go to pay off the bonds that are due October.
But the original purpose of the fund was to manage administrative costs associated with North Kelsey. That would include legal
real estate studies of any kind that we needed.
Yeah,
appraisals,
all those things. Yeah. Okay. All right, Councilmember Cutback, sorry about that.
No, that's okay. So this loan that we're doing, is are any of the funds going to for any fees or for any studies for any developers or anything, or is it truly for professional and admin? What I'm saying, are we taking on any cost to from any developer or any interested party, or is it just truly professional fees, legal fees, and admin fees?
Okay, the budget for this year for this fund is
124, it says here.
$75,000 for attorney fees.
Okay.
$49,000 for admin fees. That's it for 2012.
All right, thanks.
Councilmember Gambit.
Make a motion to adopt resolution 2012-05, authorizing an interfund loan from general fund to the North Kelsey Development Fund.
Second.
All right, motion's been made by Councilmember Gamble and seconded by Councilmember Hanford to adopt resolution number 2012-005, authorizing an interfund loan from the general fund to the North Kelsey Development Fund. Any other questions or comments for Diane? All right. With that said, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you, Diane. Okay, moving on to new business number 6, lift hiring freeze, authorized filling city clerk. No, we're not doing that. Sorry, I forgot to pull that one off. I just went straight from the thing here. Boom. However, we are going to be asking here for a hiring freeze to be lifted and authorize filling the planning technician position. Mr. Flaubert, you know what? Ratify Mike before we have you go there. I think that it can go, that it should be said that we are seeing a great deal of activity within our planning and permitting department. That's a combination of both works that are going before a planning commission, as well as works that are a result of increased and coming permitting applications. And so, quite frankly, we see a wave that is approaching, and we want to be riding atop of that wave. Because we get on the backside of that, we're going to fall behind, quite frankly, in our abilities to keep up with some of the expectations that have been set for the planning commission or planning department. And so I will be frank in saying that what we have before us is an unfunded request. But we are also looking forward to the coming of some very highly, I want to say profitable, we're an nonprofit organization. High expectations for funds. And which is going to require additional workload or additional activities by the planning department. And so I know we're a little ahead of what is actual, but I think we're not ahead of what's necessary. And so with that said, I'll now turn the... Oh, I might have just made your entire argument.
You said it all.
Yeah. with that said, I did give rely on staff and rely on Brad's understanding of the department the request that's before you have given the approval. But
just real briefly, the work that we laid out before you in the last council meeting is a really aggressive schedule for planning commission and code changes, and then we've also been seeing the increase in the amount of building permit applications, and they're not big fancy ones that people building new buildings, but there's a lot of tenant improvements. In fact, those ones actually usually take more time because people are trying to squeeze something in a box that doesn't quite fit. And then just like what we're doing tonight, the mailing's coming out, which, you know, doing the sign code, just the clerical work on the sign code alone, things like that, you know, are going to be a real, in order to get those things done, it's going to be a real strain on staff. So what I'm proposing is that we refill the planning technician position that was laid off a couple of years ago. Right now, there is not a direct funding source in it. The backup position is the undesignated ending fund balance. We would have the money to pay for that. However, we are expecting that the Walmart application should be coming in soon. We have no money for that. We can cover this year, and the next year's money from the next corporation would cover that. We're also gearing up for the 2015 periodic update of the comprehensive plan, which is a highly intensive effort that the planning and permitting division will be undertaking. And just to have, just keeping things on track, I'm just looking through our schedule right now, and we didn't send the notice to the Department of Commerce about the airport compatibility notice that we're supposed to have done last Friday. So we have to catch up this week to make sure we can keep that on track. So that's the need. The funding, we hope, will be there. And if for some reason that's delayed a little bit, there is actually money that is available in the undesignated reserve funds. So I think I'm open for questions with that. And Paul wants to say something first, though.
Paul? Okay, I just a couple more comments. And thank you for your eloquence on our case. I have concerns in this situation that our work, we do have a tremendous work program, and the word aggressive is a very diplomatic way to describe that work program, seriously. But I have two concerns. One is that in trying to meet these targets, and the amount of work involved, and goodness knows there's a tremendous amount of processing and work involved in all that we do in this state, and not that it's in California, but a lot of time that's incurred in even the simplest of tasks. But my concern is that, one, that there'll be some that I will burn out some of the staff in trying to meet these deadlines, and the other is even greater concern in some ways that I have fear for a dropping quality of the work, that there won't be sufficient time to do the work that should be done, much less needs to be done, and that we do produce a quality product, and that we bring good, complete information to the commission and council for making some good decisions. I think it's really vital. This is, you know, we don't casually ask for this, but I think it's really vital that we do get some good support and help, and this mission would really go along with helping us solve that, and even missing things like Melissa DeConner's mission. Cause for any questions?
Oh, just pleasure.
I always have questions.
Councilmember Cuddeback?
Thank you. I'm happy to hear that things seem like they're getting busier and there's more planning and work, but I have to be honest with you. We just had an HR Finance Committee meeting right before this meeting, and we talked about making difficult decisions and setting up reserves and making funds restricted and not tapping into those in order to build up the reserves we need over time. And even setting the schedule we are looking at, it's going to be pretty tough to get there, to have, you know, all our reserves set up, our general fund, our contingency fund. And we were talking about how we're, you know, again, it seems like we're having this discussion about banking, you know, when the property sold or when the money comes in. And I remember us having this discussion, you know, when I attended council meetings before I was elected on, you know, that Kelsey money's coming in, let's spend it. And it sounds like we're having, you know, similar discussions right now about that. So I'm really hesitant to approve an unfunded position at this point. What would be easier for me if you brought back a plan that says we need this position so much because of the work we're doing that we're going to cut back in this other area, versus, you know, we're going to take it out of the reserves, or we're going to, you know, take it. Hopefully the permits that do come in for these properties will cover this position instead of making maybe a choice somewhere else. So that's my concern. I hear what you're saying about you know, the work program, the burnout of staff, all of that, it makes sense. My other suggestion would be maybe we need to look at the work program. I mean, we've talked about that. You've brought forward a suggestion of hiring staff. Is there a suggestion on the flip side of if we don't hire this staff, this would be what we'd have to give up on the work program? Because that would be a decision we'd all look at and go, okay, well, we don't want to give up on the work program. This is what we'd have to by not hiring this staff. So I guess, you know, I would like another option besides just funding and, you know, a position that's not budgeted for. You know, is there another option? Is there a way to cut somewhere else so we can fund this position if it's that important? Or is there a way to look at the work plan and go, okay, maybe we need to slim back in this area before we start taking money out of reserves or banking on money that hasn't come in on fees, sale of property, all of that. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Geary?
Thank you. I'm certainly on record as not being a big fan of using the undesignated ending fund balance to fund long-term positions. That suggestion was made in this case, and just trying to think through it. As I had said during that time during the budget cycle, for a long-term position, using that just isn't why. If this was going to be a temporary position, I think I could probably on board with that. If this is going to be, if we were to dip into that, if there was really this need, because, you know, if it's one of those extraneous circumstances and it specifically was, this is for 2012 only. Long term, undesignated ending fund balances is not the way to go, in my opinion. I would say that before, and I still believe that if we were to do this in a contract or a temporary basis, that would certainly at least be more palatable to me. I certainly understand that there's work to do, and people get burnt out. I get burnt out, but I still have to do my job, you know, in that aspect. So, you know, I don't want to be the jerk, but there's work to do, you know, and we have to do it rather than, sometimes we have to do more with less. And when a city budget is tight, we have to do that. And that means people work longer hours. I do that, sometimes it's just necessary. I would love to see this be done. I don't see how we're going to, I got to see a better place where we're going to pay for this as it's presented here. If we do it if it's specifically temporary, I could entertain undesignated ending fund balance, I think. But otherwise, yeah, I got a hard time with it. Thank you.
Brett?
What's temporary?
It's not a long-term position.
It actually asks for only funding through 2014 to get completed with the 2015 comprehensive plan update.
Yeah, I would be thinking of a council approval of the job through the end of 2012, and then we would need to continue to approve it for 2013, 2014. Not approval. It would have to be something like that for me to make that work. 2014 still, I mean, that's still a couple of years. And to Councilmember Kettleback's point, you know, that there's, it's not funded. But I would like to see it work. It's something a little more creative. Thanks.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. Where do the funds typically come for this position? Is this in just regular permits that come in through the department and so forth?
It's a general fund position that, you know, it's either permit, revenue, or property tax, sales tax.
Okay. And then I understand you've got a large amount of work that has to be done by May. I also agree with what's been said that taking it out of our, you know, ending fund balances is troublesome to me. And I don't like funding things on the promise of future revenue that we may not get. I do see this a little bit different in that we're very close to knowing one way or another if we're going to be getting some revenue from the Walmart property. And so I guess to Council Member Cuddeback's point, if that was a given and we knew where that stood, would that change your feeling on this particular position and on funding it that way? Because it would impact my decision. And so, you know, I don't know if there's a, if we can say, go out and interview, you know, do what you need to. However, we might want to hold off on funding that position until 3 weeks from now. I believe we're getting closer to the end of the appeal date or something along those lines. But I'm also very concerned about, you know, taking it out of general fund surpluses. But I would not be opposed to taking it out of real North Kelsey proceeds.
Paul?
If I may, I have some reservation about soliciting or interviewing if we're not sure the position would be fun. I don't think that would be fair to the applicants. But I'm also concerned about restricting it too much so that we really don't get any applicants or don't get any good applicants for the position. Perhaps there's maybe a middle ground in trying to fund for 2013, but I'm not sure how you address the issue of the taking undesignated funds.
Well, if I still have the floor, to Councilmember Gearing's point, funding this position through 2012 is different than funding it through 2015 in my mind as well, without any way of funding it long term. You know, so again, that might be another angle. I mean, I'm optimistic that we're going to have something coming in on the North Kelsey real soon. It just seems like there's a timeline on your behalf to get this done sooner than maybe those 3 weeks will allow.
Councilmember Gamble?
I echo the Finance Committee's comments here. But the other, I guess the one thing that I would need is, we've talked a lot about over the last several weeks of the sale and what that's going to pay for. I mean, I'm just adding up all the things we've talked about, including the presentation, the downtown stuff, the, you know, the change in plan. And so I guess for me, maybe just clarification on exactly all, it seems like that's a lot of different things we plan on doing for the sale of that location. Starting to add up in my
we're not asking to use the sale of proceeds. This is the building permit fees from that.
Well, Andrew, okay, the building
that is different. Yeah, it's different.
Okay.
It's not money we've already said we're going to spend in four other places.
Well, that's good clarification for me.
Yeah. Good. All right. Thank you, Councilmember Hambrick.
I would. I'm pretty much in agreement with what everyone's saying. I'm wondering if there's a way we can take action tonight to get this ball rolling, to fund it through the end of this year, temporarily. And then, as Councilmember Williams said, once things go through in the next few weeks, then we can look to extend it through what we're looking for, once there's surety of funds. But at least that way we'll get the ball rolling and help you guys get this done.
That would be a good first step, at least.
So then will we just change the date for our motion? Is that?
That's one potential, is to change the date from 2014 to 2012. There's other options that maybe the council is considering as well. Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. I would be more in mind to wait and see if those fees are going to come in. If fees come in, I'm supportive of funding this position out of the fees. I want to make that clear. If we have fees that we know are in or coming in, even if it's within a week, but we know they're going to be here, I agree. When you're busier, you need help. We always knew the planning and permitting department was lean. We knew that. So I am in agreement of funding, but I want to know what that funding is. The reserve funds are, you know, that isn't okay for me. The second part is, if we budget for this position for 2013 and it's needed and the work's there, then I'm open to that. So I'm not saying this position only has to be through 2012. It has to go through the budgeting process like all other positions where we made choices and we made hard choices. And this might be a choice that we make depending on all the work and we want to do it right. So I would be more of the mind of waiting until we see those permitting. And I don't think it's going to, as Councilman Williams said, you know, it could be 3 weeks or, you know, to kind of wait and then see where we're at with the permitting fees, but then bring this as part of the budget for 2013 and let it go through the process. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I was almost going to step in there because Brad just informed us, that Diane just informed us.
Oh.
That Diane.
Yeah, in the 2012 budget, we already budgeted $92,000 for permit fees from Walmart.
Okay. Okay, so that's already been spent.
Didn't realize that.
Okay. Well, thank you for letting us know that. So that would have to be looked at, and I guess, you know, thanks for mentioning that, because we can still look at funding the position if it's needed, but where, you know, look at other options of funding it besides reserves. And we've already spent those fees, so. But I would be open to funding this in 2013 going through the budget process. Thanks.
Thank you. Do we have, I know we've had been told this before, but what are the permitting fees expected from Walmart for, you know, in the next 12 months? That is the complete.
Yeah.
Okay, and we've already, from what I heard, we've already budgeted
that.
So then, to Councilman Gamble's point, then this would be funding it out of the sale proceeds, not out of the permitting proceeds.
Or just not replacing the any fund balance and designate any fund balance.
Correct.
Okay. Councilor McGee.
Thanks. I do understand the need for this. I want to make sure I communicate that. And then if you're trying to sell a position that's only through the end of 2012, what are the quality of applicants you're going to get? And I hear that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting here trying to think of how we can move forward on this tonight. I appreciate Councilmember Hanford's. You know, can we lift the hiring freeze, undesignated ending fund balance for 2012? I can't really believe I'm saying that, but and then for we need the position through 2014. I'm just thinking out loud here, where the position may, you know, we may have to cut it off. And lay that the understanding. And I said, "Who are you going to get to want a job like that? Hey, you may be laid off after 9 months." So, thinking out loud here. Thanks.
While you're thinking out loud, Ben,
I think we've got an opportunity here. We've got to look at what we're offering somebody. We're offering them a good quality job that could potentially open something else. You know, so don't look at it. How are we going to get somebody in here? The worst is somebody's going to say it's no. I think we collectively can make a decision that we want to do that, I think you'll be surprised at the amount of applicants we get that want to work at City Hall. It's a good job.
Yeah.
It's a bargain position. You know, I wouldn't say we're not
going to
get applicants. So.
And I certainly appreciate that. That's a good word. We need a funding source for 2013 and 2014, and we won't really come to that till the end of the year. We really need to move forward. I could probably hold my nose and do it for 2012 only, but we have to have a designated long-term funding source for any period of time after that. And that's just to get this thing rolling. So anyway, I'd entertain that, but it's not my favorite. Thanks.
Yep.
Just a couple of items. If you look at the saving purchase and sale agreement, fees generated to the city are about $2.5 million when you calculate any traffic mitigation fees for the programmatic improvements, for traffic mitigation fees, for just standard general management fees. When you look at the engineering fees, the water hookup fees, saving will bring in, on closing, about $2.5 million in revenue into the city. Now, a lot of that's going to be used by the public works side of the city staff. At the same time, the planning staff is really, you know, they're the funnel that all that comes through. On the next core agreement, if you look at the purchase and sale agreement addendum that was attached to that, that's about $1.4 million worth of fees that will be coming through the city. Similarly, the actual permit fees on next core, I was just doing a quick review, it looks like about $75,000 in permit fees, traditional permit building permit fees, that sort of thing. And that permit application will probably come through either late 2012 or early 2013. So those are just two big projects you're looking at. We budgeted for the saving contract this year. We're working on next core for next year. The permit fees look to be coming forward. We've had Housing Hope come in and say they're going to be doing $20 million worth of construction over the next 2 to 3 years in the Monroe area. That's permit fees in addition. And when you start to calculate all the TI fees, Paul could price it down and spend 2 days of his time giving you a list of all the tenant improvements and giving you the list of all the miscellaneous permits that he's calculating. However, I don't think that's the best use of his time either. So the council has a decision to make here is, and this is common in every government, the business cycle moves ahead way before government is able to respond. And where the impact is really going to take place is in our planning department. Because as business ramps up and those permits start cycling in, and we have certain time restrictions to respond to those, the natural progression is going to be the customer service is going to drop until we can get ourselves staffed up. So the decision I think you're struggling with here is the revenue hasn't been materialized. The indications are that it will materialize, but right now we're in a position where we can hire staff, get them trained to the city systems and be ready for the development. As long as you understand that if the development doesn't come through, you'll be making that hard decision to lay somebody off.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
So I think the worst thing that we can do now that we know, though, that we've already budgeted and we've spent, you know, the fees that we were just talking about, is that if we do move forward, and before we know that even those fees are going to be paid, now if we end up in a situation where it doesn't happen, we don't get the fees, now that $92,000 that we've already spent is going to be coming from the undesignated, as well as a position that we potentially would be funding would be coming from the undesignated. So to go back to, I think, the suggestion about, you know, is there any way we can move? I still think that is, and me personally wouldn't feel good moving forward without at least knowing that $92,000 that we've already spent and that was originally what we were going to pay for is we're going to get that. And my question, if we go down the hiring process, Ben, how, I mean, there's a traditional time that we post a position, right? How long is that?
Well, the bargaining agreement says we have to do it for at least 5 days. So, I mean, that's the minimum.
The minimum is five. What was that?
It can go longer.
What's the average that we do?
You know, for a position like this, in this market, you don't have to leave it up for longer than a week. I typically get 50 to 70 resumes for a position like this.
Yeah. I guess, just taking those two things into consideration, I mean, if there's any way, I mean, we do that type of stuff all the time where I will post it, you know, up. I might not have secured funding through my senior leadership team, you know, way back in the sky on the East Coast, but we'll go through the process, and then the funding will, you know, come through, and I would use the analogy here where at least we have the fees that we know we're going to get. So I guess I still go back to, I don't know if I'd want to, without at least...
I agree.
Knowing that we're going to get that the beginning of that $92,000 we've already spent.
Oh, that's it. Brad, or Diane, or Ben, Mr. Sachs brought up a good point with regards to the fees, and much of this work is going to impact our non-general funds, our utility funds. Is there a way to tie this position to that group so that the position can be funded through the
To the utilities?
Yes.
Not the utilities, but you could use proceeds from North Kelsey.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking now that the impact fees and things like that that were coming here, that the work that the plan air is doing is directly related to that. So just a thought that we connect them directly to the utilities for the purpose of those.
The time that they directly work on things like that, we do build to the utilities and the roads and the streets and things like that. But it's not a hard number that we can say X number of dollars is going to go there.
Okay. Councilman Williams?
Yeah, I would just, again, like to echo what Councilman Gamble said, that if we could put this out a little bit longer, whether we keep the posting open or we hold off posting it for 2 or 3 weeks, I'm confident that if the sale goes through that we're going to have funds available, whether it's permitting fees or whether it's the mitigation or all the other stuff associated with that. I'm confident that we will have funds available for the position, but I'm hesitant to spend money before we have clarity that it's coming through. So, and I understand, you know, what Mr. Sachs, his point that we need to be ahead of things, but we've seems like we've guessed wrong on this one several times already, and I'd hate to keep doing that again. So,
I think consensus is that we'll delay this for a couple weeks until we get closer. Sounds what I'm hearing, and see six heads nodding. Brad, did you have another?
Well, I thought I was hearing was that do start the recruitment process, but not actually hire somebody until after the safety deal closes.
Councilmember Hampton.
Yeah, that's. I think we should do what Councilmember Gamble said. Get the paperwork ready together, post it in a week or two, and get the process rolling so that we have. So once the funding's there, Ben makes the call and
he makes the hire.
Yeah. It's a hired Ben deal.
Ben,
I'm fine with that.
Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. But would a delay of 3 weeks make that much of a difference from what I'm hearing from Councilmember Williams?
Well, to answer your question, I personally don't care which approach, whether we delay it or we post but we don't make the final hire. It still accomplishes the same thing, that we don't spend the money till we have assurances that we're going to be receiving it. That's all I care about. The, mm-hmm. the vehicle we take to get there, I don't care.
But
But a delay of 3 weeks doesn't seem like that big of a deal to determine whether or not we'll actually have the fees. But, go ahead.
I think it's more than the delay of 3 weeks is the point, though, that if we delay 3 weeks, then you're still going to have to post for at least a week,
mm-hmm.
and then you're going to be going through the resumes for an additional week. You're going to be setting up interviews. So, I mean, it actually pushes it even further beyond just the 3 weeks. So I think to Jeff's point, actually, is that, I mean, it's not exactly what he's asking for, but this would be at least a little way that we could start the process.
I mean, perhaps I missed something. Is there a time-critical point that this has to be accomplished within the next 3 weeks? Did I miss a target date?
Yeah, right here. Well, from my perspective, the sooner the better that we get some hands on board. If one tactic is to delay and try and get closer to some assurance of getting some revenue,
mm-hmm.
then I would certainly advocate for doing the advertising now, knowing that it's unfunded, but getting those applications in and narrowing down the candidate pool and perhaps stop at that point. We'd be at a top two or three or four, but we stop. We don't do interviews because I think that's pushing it too far until we know that it's a funded position.
Okay.
But that would at least, if that's the route we're going to go, that would at least save some time when the money comes in. That very quickly.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Gary?
Thank you. So would it make sense then to, do we need a motion to lift the hiring freeze to begin recruitment for the unbudgeted position of plant technician, or is it the direction we've given? If we don't actually need
Yeah, I think that, we can move forward with the recruitment process and...
So that's not, since you're not actually hiring someone, there's no freeze to lift, you can go ahead and recruit for it. Okay. All right, never mind then. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I think we have direction. We'll appreciate the input and certainly appreciate your perspective from council and I will move forward as directed. Thank you.
That's a good idea.
Okay, we are moving on to final action number one. Authorize mayor to sign an addendum to contract for prosecuting charity services. Chief Windsor.
The next item is to authorize the mayor to sign this the addendum to the current contract for prosecuting services with Zachary and Thomas, extending the contract through December 31st, 2014. It is in our current budget.
Councilmember Williams.
I would like to make the motion to authorize mayor to sign the 2011 to 2014 addendum to contract for prosecuting services between Zachary and Thomas prosecutors and the City of Monroe City.
Second.
Okay, motion's been made by Councilmember Williams and seconded by Councilmember Camp as read. Any other questions for the Chief? Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. Chief, what was the original compensation? It said a base rate increased to $6,467. What was the, do you know what the original one was?
I'm not sure. 3 years ago what the exact figure was, but the increase that you're looking at is according to the contract last year, the CPI increase.
Which may have been, what, 3%?
Whatever the CPI was.
Okay, thanks. Just curious.
Okay, any other questions for the Chief? All right. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Paul, you've had a busy night this evening, and you're back up.
Yeah.
Final action number two, RZ 2011-01 Roosevelt Road rezone table. That's the right one.
Yeah.
A little background about this Roosevelt Road rezoning. You can see Highway 2 in the south, Roosevelt Road itself going up the west side of this property. This was annexed back in 2008 and is in the comp plan, was in the comp plan as this residential 2 to 5 units per acre. Then last spring, or the spring of, I want to say spring of 2010, there was an amendment to step up that density. 5 to 7 units per acre, much like the mix in Roosevelt Ridge. The commission recommended denial. Council moved ahead with approval, and the comp plan was changed. Now, the Growth Management Act does call for consistency between the comprehensive plan and the zoning. So the zoning should have been changed by normal practice to match that change in the comp plan to 5 to 7. So the zoning should have gone from what UR 9600 to UR 6000, 6000 square foot minimum lot. Whoops. The rezoning was discussed last spring with the commission and delayed. But the further action was delayed in order to get some staff online and to come back and do the follow-through with the rezoning. Now, the commission had a couple of meetings with this, and there are some issues revolving around this list on the right here. The property, I just started to describe it earlier, the property is not a great candidate for reaching toward this target of 1,000 units for a couple reasons. One is that about half of the properties in critical areas in wetlands that cannot be built. A lot of it is developed with some smaller lots, but there are some developable parts in there, and there's the potential to do some assembly of some of these larger lots that have a single residence on them. But when you consider the project as a whole, there are some potential impacts that really can't effectively be addressed at this point. Providing water and wastewater, some issues about storm sewer and drainage. The big one is traffic, and how this development in itself would further impact the US 2 Roosevelt / Frylands intersection. I want to say it's at level of service D at this point. Is that right? F? Yeah. Maybe D or close to flunking. And this would exacerbate that situation. And the part of the issue there is that there's nothing in the current transportation improvement plan for any improvements at that intersection. It's not in the plan, so it's not even on the horizon. And Roosevelt Ridge will also contribute potentially toward that, depending on which direction people go from there. But there were some concerns about how those things might be mitigated and if they ever would be mitigated. And the we had a joint meeting here, what was the first week of February, with the Commission and Council, and the discussion seemed to go in the direction of delaying or tabling this zoning until such time as we can make some more progress in updating the comp plan, updating the transportation plan, and you know that giving us time to bring these issues along and try and find some ways to solve them or mitigate them. And part of the key in this idea is that while the state does require that zoning be consistent, when you do change the comp plan, there is no mandated time limit for when you are supposed to bring it consistent. That the zoning can lag, and in fact does. And I think we have maybe one other case where it doesn't match. But nonetheless, as long as we are making some efforts toward trying to resolve the issue, I don't think it's going to be a problem. Since we don't have that specific requirement, I think there may be a possibility if someone could raise a complaint about this to the Growth Management Hearing Board. I don't think it's going to happen in this case because we are delaying it with a plan. If we simply decided to say, we don't want to deal with it, we're just going to delay it and ignore it, and that could be a problem. But I think if we're proactive about trying to address it, then it won't be a problem. So the recommendation is to table this until, I think the recommendation reads it, until we update the 2015 plan. That's not to say that it couldn't take place before then. We have a new buildable lands, you know, a land capacity report coming out late this year that may shed some light on what sort of targets we should be shooting for. Although I don't think this piece is probably going to play a significant role in that, but it would certainly give us some time to, like I say, to try and address some of these mitigation issues by updating the plans that the comp plan and the transportation plan to reflect this change. So that's where we're at. At this point, I guess you have some options. We can delay it, or council can simply take action to rezone this to the R. What did I say?
6,000.
6,000. Thank you. You are 6,000. And I guess there's even another option to direct staff to go back and amend this back to its original 2-5 classification. So you know, there's any number of things that could be done. But I think the one that may make the most sense at this point is tabling this for future action.
Paul, I know one of the council members is going to ask this, and somehow council member Gearing hit his light. I'm not sure how he did that. I said no there, but since he's over there, and I'm going to ask, but you made a comment with regards to the critical areas that the you use the word cannot be developed, cannot because of critical areas, but yet with regards to the traffic can be mitigated. So my question is, cannot the critical areas also be mitigated?
Yes. It's not a no can't developer statement. It is possible to mitigate. I don't recall if these wetlands have been categorized as, you know, type 1, 2, or 3. There are different ratios of mitigation if you try and land bank or buy credits in other wetlands. It could be a 2-to-1, 3-to-1, even higher ratio.
Paul, let me interrupt. They can be mitigated. And whose responsibility is it to mitigate? The developers or
the
cities?
That is the developer.
So the
applicant.
So the city may go forward with the rezone, understanding that somebody may never mitigate that property. But potentially, somebody could mitigate that property to get the credits or whatever for those critical areas and choose to build to the levels in which city has designated in a rezone, correct?
It's possible. We did have one inquiry about that southeast corner below, just south of the wetlands, which would involve taking out a small piece of wetland to get access to that off of, I forget the name of the street, is that just east of the east line of the Roosevelt property. We had some discussions about that. Taking perhaps half an acre, it can be done. That requires the whole process of the federal 404 permits and Corps of Engineers and so forth.
But that's a responsibility.
But
of
it's
the,
possible, but it's, and it's not the responsibility of the city. It's the responsibility of the applicant to take that on.
All right.
So,
Councilor Gary,
I appreciate those comments. I'll get to the comment on those in a second because I absolutely agree. It's not the city's responsibility to worry about that. In this particular instance, I think a couple of them. One, I'm opposed to tabling. This is a piece of low-hanging fruit that the Planning Commission should either knock off very quickly and give us a recommendation, or we should just rezone it ourselves. There's no reason to kick the can down the road again. It's already been done once for a very small piece of land. The reason this was annexed in the first place, we saw it as an opportunity now, once it was in the city, to again show good faith effort in increasing our density. The fact of the matter is that with all those wetlands, there are going to be any huge traffic impacts because you can't build a whole ton of them. You can increase the density potentially, but since if you could build out on every single part of that, there might be some legitimate traffic issues. But again, it's not the city's responsibility to mitigate those. What a zoning change is if you're just changing the color on the map, like you said, and in a long-term situation, it makes sense to make this UR 6000 because it gives more options. No one may ever build out. All you're doing is changing the color on the map. It provides future long-term options, and it helps show that good faith effort that we're still making to increase the density deficit that we have in this town. That was the thinking behind bringing it into the city in the first place. As I said before, it still has a Snohomish address. It's not served by its water, sewer, anything. It's in the Snohomish School District. So if we're not gonna change the color of the map, then why is it in the city in the first place, honestly? Yeah. Again, and you're not gonna come down the highway too. I drive this and have biked it numerous times. If you're going to go to Snohomish, you're just going to follow Roosevelt Road all the way out to the west end of Highway 2. You're not going to come down to Roosevelt and then go out to Snohomish. And you could go Trombley and drop into the city a couple other ways, totally bypass Highway 2. And people who live out there do that. So I think Planning Commission overthought that a little bit. That's one of the reasons why Council didn't take that recommendation. I mean, we don't always rubber stamp. Appreciate the work they do, but it's an advisory board, and I personally felt that they kind of overthought this one. This one should be real straightforward. Should you change the zoning? I think we heard from someone had mentioned, well, we asked the property owners, and none of them want to build out. Well, okay, you don't have to, but who's to say a future landowner doesn't? It provides more options by doing it, and that was the thinking behind doing it. Again, if Planning Commission's busy, have an extra meeting, get it done. But if we could bypass that altogether and just do it ourselves, and I think he said that was an option, then we just should just get it, be done with it, and move on. Again, there are no, you're never going to have 10,000 houses in there because of all the critical areas. And it's not our responsibility as a city to worry about mitigating those. That would be a developer's responsibility. So that really shouldn't even come into the come into the question. To me, it's very straightforward. There's no real reason to put it off any further. But either get a recommendation from Planning Commission or change the zoning ourselves. Do it now, and then we don't have to. And then just be done with that.
You want to entertain a motion to rezone?
I mean,
the Planning Commission did make a recommendation. I mean, that is a recommendation to delay the zoning, so they have made their decision. So it comes.
Well, the latency, that's not really a recommendation. We talk about wanting to be proactive, and you use the term proactive, but there's nothing proactive about it, with all due respect, to kicking it down the road again, right? Let's get it done. It's a small, we have bigger fish to fry. Let's do this and be done with it instead of kicking it down the road. Let's not move at the speed of
conference. What I think I hear you saying is your recommendation to, or request of council would be, let's consider this rezone and move down the road with it.
Let's schedule a public hearing.
Public hearing. Or if I heard you right, because we're not supplying them with any sewer or water, it will not, if we don't rezone it, it has no benefit to the city in terms of residential infill.
The residents would actually, their costs would most likely go down by not being annexed.
So de-annex it is what your point is.
A more extreme option, but the bottom line is we did annex it. The intent of council has been to make it UR6000. It doesn't magically make a bunch of traffic here. It doesn't magically make a bunch of thousands of houses appear, and thousands of houses can't ever appear. So there's really no harm in doing it. Let's get it done now and be done with it, and there's no reason to kick it down the road. Again, if the Planning Commission is too busy, let's do it ourselves.
Well, then, that's just one individual, but just so I'm following up, I'm following up on it because I agree with it. My voice means nothing, but I'm going to say it anyways. I think this has been in the works since 2008. I think a lot of thought has been given to this, and especially with regards to the critical areas, I think it's been overthought. It's not the responsibility of the city. If the property is in city limits and the original intent was to rezone, then I think that we should move forward with that. But that's just one council member and a guy talking over here that has no vote. So,
if council votes in favor of rezoning, then we would, we don't need to go back to commission, then we would go forth and prepare an ordinance so forth.
And it sounds like they're busy, so I think that's a great plan. Is
that a motion?
To instruct staff to prepare
an ordinance?
Schedule a public hearing and prepare an ordinance? Is that
what we would need to have to city attorney as well?
Yes, council, that the property can only be rezoned by ordinance, and there would need to be at least one public hearing on the matter before the council voted on the ordinance.
So moved.
Is there a second on the motion? Motion is to schedule a public hearing and direct staff to prepare an ordinance for rezone to UR6000.
I'll second.
The motion has been made by Councilmember Gehring and seconded by Councilmember Camp. Any other questions for Paul? Brett?
Schedule-wise, this probably won't come before council until early fall at the earliest, because we have to keep public hearings and that kind of stuff, which we've already got a whole plate with all the other things we just talked about earlier today.
So there's a need for SEPA before all this to happen?
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
So it takes up the Planning Commission's plate, which is what they're asking. So.
Yeah, we're already booked up through with the comp plan amendments, but we have to get done by July, so it has to be after that.
Councilmember Pettibeck.
Thank you. I'll be voting no on that motion. We just heard from staff about how booked they are and what they're trying to achieve, and this doesn't seem to be a pressing issue, so I'll be voting against the motion. Bless you.
I think that staff just said, though, that it will take place after the workload that's expected in May, so this would be, essentially, we're postponing it. One way or another, Any Councilmember Sachs? Or Councilmember Sachs. Mr. Sachs?
That was a pass line. Two relevant issues I think that should be expanded on is number one, the inconsistency in your comprehensive plan. There are downside risks, although I think in this case limited risks. If someone was to appeal this to the growth board, the inconsistency, the city could be prevented from collecting mitigation fees until that inconsistency is fixed. There are teeth to being inconsistent. So I just wanted to make sure the council was aware of that. Number two, why do you upzone the property? You want more density, but when the assessor sweeps through that property after the upzone, they will look at highest and best use for those parcels. And when those property owners see that new zoning, and the assessor looks at the new zoning, instead of two dwelling units per acre, it's 6,000 every 6,000 square feet. So you're looking at 8 dwelling units per acre. The property values of those parcels will increase. And as those property values increase, that raises interest in developers that look at, instead of a brown map, they're looking at an orange map that says, hey, I can build 8 units here. I can pencil this project. I can pay for sewer. I can pay for water. Until the zoning is in place, you're not going to attract the developers. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Don't zone it. It's not going to be developed. Now, is the market right now in place for 600 homes to go in out there? Probably not. But why not give somebody the opportunity to do it? And at the same time, you've got individual property owners in that area that I'm sure would like to have entertain an offer on their property, although it sounds like the Planning Commission heard from a majority that says they're not interested. They don't have to sell their property, but there are people out there that might want to sell their property. And then lastly, the whole idea of critical areas, I agree. That's a project-level discussion that shouldn't be taking place at the rezone plan level. Those discussions should be handled at the project level where a developer is actually coming in and entering into that discussion. Right now, at the plan level, the city, I think, is obligated to move forward and make a decision, even if the decision is no, not to rezone. But at least that's an affirmative decision that puts the zoning in place, and you're taking action on that, and then you can resolve the inconsistency moving forward. So I guess my position is I think the Planning Commission punted in this case, and I don't think that was the appropriate action for them to take. There's an inconsistency in the comp plan. The council has asked them to look at this, and I think you should move forward with it.
Thank you. City Attorney Lell, anything?
No, Mr. Mayor.
Any other questions for Paul or Councilmember Williams?
So I just want to understand the motion. The motion as it stands now is that we would take the load off of the Planning Commission and basically just start the rezoning process at the council level, which wouldn't technically probably start until fall. Is that what I'm okay?
And I don't think a restart is the original direction from council. I think was for Planning Commission to look at a rezone of UR 6000. That right, was the exactly. original discussion that council had. This last year or 2 years ago?
Last year for sure. Yeah, we put it on the docket, but it's on this year's docket, so it was the year before. Yeah.
So it's really just completing. A process which council's directed or started a couple years ago.
So public hearing, and we'll take care of ourselves, yay or nay, at that time.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Gamble?
And if I'm understanding, the recommendation was to table it with the intent to rezone anyway, right?
Not necessarily.
That's the case that I'm hearing being made by everybody here.
Planning Commission's recommendation was to table it until after some other studies were done, at which time they would then relook at it to see if they were in favor of the rezone or not.
This cuts 3 years off that process.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions for anybody? Okay. All right, then we do have a motion. We'll take a vote on that motion at this time. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Motion does pass 6-1 with Councilmember Cuddeback in opposition. All right. Understanding that we'll bring this back when staff has completed the other work.
Indeed.
We'll provide an update as to when we shall see that. Okay. We've got the draft agenda for March 6, 2012. Administrator Bradley.
Thank you, Mayor. Under public hearing, we have surplus utility equipment. We have our consent agenda, and under new business, we have review policy regarding executive session materials, ordinance amending airport compatibility zone, ordinance amending mixed-use setbacks, and then we have an introduction of mixed-use setbacks. Under final action, we have accept grant award and authorized bid for Powell Street sidewalks, time code amendments. Then we have our draft agenda for March 13. Any additions or deletions?
City Attorney Lowell, you'll be here. This is the first meeting, right?
Correct. Yes. I should be there on the 6th of March.
So we'll have further information with regards to the airport compatibility zone for members of council tonight. Councilmember Cuddeback?
Thank you. When do you think we can get the sign code amendments? You know, when will those be available for us to look at? Since this is going to be final action, do you know when those would be available to us? Would it be a week before? Or what's your timeline in getting those to us?
It wasn't final action.
It's listed under final action, but we're not voting on it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Okay, so we're not voting on it.
Okay, so are you just bringing it back for more discussion? It's listed under the agenda on March 6th as final action. So, if somebody has more clear.
Incorrect listing, and we had to postpone our last sign code meeting this past week.
Okay.
Because one member could make it. So, I don't think this is going to be on the agenda for March 6th.
Okay.
We'll have to delay that back a little bit.
Just I know how long it took to create that thing.
Yes. The intent was not to have council take final action on the amendment. The intent was to give you the sign code to transmit to the Planning Commission.
Okay.
So all we're going to be doing is introducing the sign code to Council, and then that will be transmitted to the Planning Commission. They will take it through their process, and then I'll come back to Council at a future date.
But it will be your version of the sign code as you want to see it amended?
Yes.
Okay. So when could we expect that? That's going to take me a little bit to trudge through, to be honest. So, if it's a week before, that's great. Just if you have a timeline when you think that would come to us, if it's coming here.
Well, I think what also could happen is on that night, and supposing we will do everything that we can to get it to you beforehand, the action does not have to take place on that night, if I'm hearing right, that we could have... You know, an initial review, bring it back to council for additional comments, and then move forward. We're not looking at a drop dead cut sign or a drop dead date for this to go to the Planning Commission, are we? No. So it could have been under new business. Would have been under new business. So
okay.
We're not thinking final. It's just.
The final action is that you're referring to the Planning Commission. So
at some point.
That was the action that was being taken on the 6th. That's been pushed back now because they just canceled the meeting.
But with that said, if we're able to provide copies of this the week before, we'll do everything we can to do that. Paul's looking at me. All right. Okay. Lost where we were.
We're under web presentation.
Yes, we've got a web presentation this evening.
Well, we don't. Actually, it's on the agenda because council had mentioned it a number of weeks ago, and I've got to apologize. I haven't had a chance to work on it, and I need some clarification of what I'm presenting. And I probably should have got it that night when council recommended the idea. but we see it every week on everybody's computer, so I should have asked a clarifying question.
Gene, you are forgiven. It is almost 10 o'clock.
Okay. Actually, I'd rather see Gene make the presentation.
I agree. Go for it. Yeah, let's see it. Let's see
excellent.
It,
yeah.
I will say one thing with regards to the new website. I know that a request has gone out to council. I just want a friendly reminder here. We would love an update to your profile. So if you could submit an update to your
who?
Profile.
To whom?
To Fred.
Okay.
Just tell us a little bit about yourself. I think if you go to the website today, you'll see that I've updated my address to the community. Not so much a profile, but as more as a statement to the community. So following those footsteps or simply just give us an idea of who you are and what makes you tick. So, Councilmember Camp.
I'd like to move that we extend past 10 p.m. It looks like we're going to be here for a little bit longer.
Second.
All right. The motion has been made that we extend the meeting past 10 p.m. by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Gearing. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, so anything specific that you'd like to see from the website for Gene? No? Gene, man, you're in a tough spot there, bud.
I'll just pull it off the calendar.
Surprise us.
We'll work on it. Councilmember Williams?
I was one that made the suggestion a couple weeks ago, but it was more about the fact that you can set up your own alerts and things like that, and just a tour of that type of functionality. So
the customizable components of the website?
Exactly.
Here we go.
Got it.
Okay.
I'm writing that down. That was good.
Yeah.
Hired.
Buzzword bingo.
That's buzzword.
Oh, no.
All right. With that said, we do have... well, staff, anything further to report from anybody? I'll just throw that out there. Okay, nothing for myself as well. We kind of skirted over that. We do have the... Okay. All right. We do have a need for an executive session pertaining to potential litigation. Is Attorney Lell, do you have the RCW for that?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Pursuant to RCW 4230.110.1i, the City Council will convene an executive session for the purpose of discussing potential litigation with legal counsel. The executive session is anticipated to last approximately 5 minutes, and the council may take action in open session when you reconvene.
Okay. So with that said, I will direct that we now move into executive session. And appreciate that the audience will vacate the chambers at this time. All right, we are back in regular session. No action is going to be taken at this time, so we'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All right, motion's been made by Councilmember Hendrick, seconded by Councilmember Gamble. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I don't.
Hey, Jeff.